Very enthusiastic. That's great. That's what you call commitment and passion. If you love what you do, then of course, yeah, that's the way it is.
I would say that the same thing to you, Honorable Jacob.
It's very difficult for me, you know, to attend different meetings. I'm on the police one as well at the moment. I've got an NECB. It makes it very difficult for smaller parties, particularly, you know. I think the only day I have available now is a Saturday. Maybe I must start working on a Saturday.
but
that's the way it is.
Yeah, but you're managing well. You have done, you are doing exceptionally well, even with those challenges. You often say you want to see meetings, but you are able to participate with us. That is what's wonderful.
Oh, but thank you for your understanding. It's very difficult, but I think what helps is all the reports and things that we get, you know, so that once you go through all those things, and sometimes you can listen, you can't contribute because you're in different meetings and things. So it's got its advantages in having the session. But there is more advantages than having them on Zoom, on a virtual platform, because then you can attend more than one. But if it's physical, then you're thrown out, you're gone. That's the problem.
Yes, I also find I can do so many more meetings in a day if you consider traveling for example.
Yeah.
If you take those 2 hours a day in transit or on flight, etc.
Well, that's the way, you know, the world is moving, you know, technology, and I think we need to embrace it, you know, a lot of the work can be done, doesn't have to be in an office to be able to do it. But thank you very much, I appreciate it, thank you for your encouragement and your understanding.
All right, a pleasure.
Recording in progress.
Morning, honorable members.
Morning, Chairperson.
Morning.
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 Good morning, Chair.
Morning. It is now 9:28. We will start in 2 minutes. Honourable members, good morning again, and good morning to everyone who has joined our meeting this morning. The sponsored meeting is a meeting of the Portfolio Committee on Health to receive a presentation by the National Department of Health and the Ministry of the Annual Performance Plan and of the Budget for the 2022-2023 financial year. Held on this 22nd of April 2022. So you are all very welcome to this meeting. Please note that I see a number of television stations and channels also on our platform. So members, please be reminded to switch on your cameras when you do make any input. Ms. Majalamba, if you can just confirm attendance and apologies for me. Thank you.
Good morning and thank you, Chair. Present is Dr. Jacob, Mr. Munyai, Ms. Keller, Dr. Herbert, Ms. Clark, Ms. Wilson, Ms. Ishmael, Dr. Tembikwayo, Mr. Van Staden, and Mr. Imam Sheikh. Ms. Bookers will join the meeting later. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Clark.
Good morning, Chair. I just wish to inform you that I might have to move out my house and go and sit in my car and reconnect there during the meeting. My geyser burst this morning, so I've got chaos in my home at the moment. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, I also want to confirm attendance of the Ministry of the Department of Health. Mr. Joe Cutler, PLO, can you confirm who is present from the department and the ministry on the platform?
Yes, good morning, Honorable Chair and all members. Honorable Chair, the minister is on the platform and he will take it from here. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, before we continue, let me remind you that this virtual meeting is deemed to be the meeting of Parliament and therefore constitutes a meeting of the Committee of the National Assembly for official purposes only. In addition to the rules of virtual sittings, the rules of the National Assembly, including the rules of debate, apply. Members enjoy the same powers and privileges that apply in a sitting of the National Assembly. Members shall equally note that anything said in the virtual platform is deemed to have been said to the House and may be ruled upon. All members who have logged in shall be considered to be present and are requested to mute their microphones at all something unusual and recognize its speech. This is because the microphones are very sensitive and will pick up noise which might disturb the attention of other members. When recognized to speak, please unmute your microphone and connect your video. Members may make use of the icon on the bar at the bottom of their screen, which has an option that allows the members to put up his or her hand to raise points of order. The secretariat will assist in alerting the chairperson to members requesting to speak. When using the virtual system, members are urged to refrain or desist from unnecessary points of order. So we will go to invite the minister to do some introductory remarks and also to introduce the team. Honorable Minister Joe Butler.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honorable Chair, Honorable Jacobs. Good morning to yourself, to also to the Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee for Health. Good morning to my colleague, Deputy Minister, Dr. Lomo, who is in the KZN province in Eteguini, where he is still in the front line of supporting the efforts dealing with the disaster of the flood. So he's participating from that side of our country. Honorable Chair, I'm with a team from the department, the managers of the department led by the Director General, Dr. Telezi. Those who will be presenting items will be introduced. The DG will do so. So we wish to take this opportunity to thank you, Honorable Chair, and the members to give us a chance to present the annual performance plan of 2022-23 of the National Department of Health. As we know, Honorable Members, that the last 2 years, the 2020-2021 and 2021-22, were the years dominated by the pandemic of COVID-19, with a lot of energy, a lot of financial resources, a lot of human resources, and a lot of our programs weighing heavily more in the direction of the containment of the COVID-19 pandemic, the public health measures which have been taken, and later, more especially during the course of the 2021-22, a lot of effort being put on the rollout of the vaccination program, which we're still continuing at the present moment. So we are hopeful as we present this annual performance plan that 2022-23 financial year will be different from the last two financial years, but we hope that there will be more stability in the pandemic, that the pandemic will be better contained. We're hopeful from the experience of the last quarter, the last quarter of the last financial year, 2021-22, where with the advent of the Omicron, which descended on us as a variant of the pandemic as to the end of the year 2021 and the beginning of 2022, which even though was highly transmissible, has shown characters of less severity, and as various medical specialists and scientists have said, partly because of the immunity, high levels of immunity due to vaccination, and also the natural immunity, but also some indications that the virus itself may have been less severe, less virulent. So we're hoping that this will continue, and so that this year, 2022-2023 financial year, we can be able to focus quite more squarely on the programs which we are presenting here today, and not be again diverted to the extent that has happened over the last 2 years, where, as I've said, both financial and human resources and other focus on programs weighed heavily on the containment of COVID, and we lost some ground in the implementation of some of our planned programs. We hope 2022-23 will be different. I must just quickly allude to the fact that over the last few days, we've seen worrying signs of a rise in the level of COVID infections. We hope that this will not go much higher, but we're monitoring, and we will be able to report back to the committee and to the public once we have seen the trend. We need to give it a little bit more time to see how it is going, but we hope that even if there's a rise as we go into the winter, that it will not be disruptive enough to divert us from our programs. And honorable members, we know that as we present here the plans and the financial resources allocated to those plans, we know that the finances are never enough, especially in the highly burdened public health system, which carries a lot of huge burden of disease, looking after the entire population. We know that even though we have a dual system, a two-tier system, where we work hand in hand with the private health system, but the burden of the large burden of looking after the huge component of the population lies with the public health system. And so we know that as we will be outlining here the programs and the financial resources, this can never be enough, but we have to do the best with what we have been allocated. We often don't appreciate the huge burden which is carried by the public health system, but it's from time to time when we have to interact quite on the front line with the public health system, that we appreciate the volume of work which is carried in this case. And just to say that on Tuesday, when I was also in the KZN, we visited the Prince Mshiyeni Hospital, which is called also one of those quite affected by the flood because of the destruction of the water supply system in the Mpumlazi Township. The hospital did not have supply of water from the municipal system because of the breakdown of the water pipes. But at the same time, as they were really making do with the water tank delivery to keep the hospital functional, at the same time, it was really carrying quite a huge number of people. Just on the Tuesday when we were there, the hospital, the outpatients and all the clinics were really very, very, very busy. And when we inquired about the expected number of people to be treated on the outpatients just on that day, they indicated that it's between 1,500 to 1,800, just as visits to the hospital in one day. So that reminds us the kind of number of clients which our public health system have to carry. Now, you can imagine in the midst of the disaster where there is not adequate supply of water, but because people need services, just on that day, they were going to be seeing just between 1,500 and 1,800 clients on the outpatient basis. So that is just a reminder of the amount of work which is carried by our public health system. We want to take this opportunity to assure this committee, the Portfolio Committee for Health, and also the people of the Council of South Africa, that working with our colleagues in the provinces, we will do our best to make sure that with the resources allocated to us, we discharge our responsibility of providing health services to our people to the best of our ability. We remain committed to the attainment of a long and healthy life for all South Africans. With that, Honorable Chair, I would want to invite the Director General, Dr. Mtelezi, to indicate the presentation which will be made by members of the team from health, which will outline our mission and our objectives, what is this APP based on, and then go into the details of what we aim to achieve during the course of this 2022-23 financial year. And with your permission, Honorable Chair, can we invite Dr. Mutelezi to come forward?
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister, and good morning to the Chairperson, Honorable Members, the Deputy Minister, the colleagues and members of the media. I would like to thank our Minister for the introduction notes to our presentation. Firstly, with your indulgence, may I introduce the delegation from the Department of Health. As mentioned, we are accompanying our Minister and our Deputy Minister, and then we are joined by Dr. Nicholas Crisp, who is the Deputy Director General for the National Health Insurance. We are then also joined by Ms. Baden Rainey, who is our Deputy Director General for Corporate Services, Mr. Ramperwane Morowane, who is the Acting Deputy Director General for Primary Health Care, Dr. Zuki Binini, who is the Acting DG for HIV, TB, STI, Maternal Child and Women's Health, Dr. Akwaina Tulare, who is a technical specialist within the National Health Insurance Unit, Mr. Andre Felter, who is the Acting Chief Financial Officer, then we've got Ms. Milani Volmaran, who is the Chief Director for Policy and Planning and also Digital Health Systems. We've got Ms. Tigeleti Shabalala, Chief Director STM, and we've got Mr. Ayanda Sakela, Chief Director Infrastructure and Facilities Management. We've got Ms. Pakiso Nemasibanani, who's Chief Director Forensic Services and also responsible for hospital services. We've got Ms. Annette Mahongwa, who's the Chief Audit Executive in the department. Then we've got our Chief of Staff, Dr. Walid Sidriba, Mr. Hata, who's our parliamentarizing officer, and then Rwanda Pretoria, who's from our Police and Planning Unit. And Chair, without wasting time, I would like to introduce Ms. Milani Volmaran, who is going to do the first part of the presentation, looking at the APP, the target, the founding documents, and what do we, or how did we work on the APP, and what guided us as we worked on that. And then at the end, then the Chief Finance Officer, Mr. Andre Fenter, will come in with the figures that will support the work that we put in terms of our targets and indicators that we will be presenting this morning. So with the indulgence of the Chair and Honourable Members and the Minister, I would like to hand over to Ms. Milani Volmaran to lead us through the presentation. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Honourable Chair, can I continue?
Please do it, thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee, Minister, DG, and Senior Management of the National Department of Health. Chair, with your permission, I am going to switch off my video just to save the bandwidth.
Yes, please do. You're welcome if you are in the show.
Thank you. as indicated by the Director General, I'm going to do just a summary version of the annual performance plan for the 2022-23 financial year. Just to start off with the presentation, I'm just going to give a little bit of context. So the health department or the health sector is included as the government priority 2 as part of the MPSS 2019-2024. Our vision is a long and healthy life for all South Africans. One of our guiding documents is the National Development Plan. And just quoting a section from the National Development Plan, that's indicating that the performance of the health, South African health system since 1994 has been poor, despite good policy and relatively high spending as a proportion of GDP. Services are fragmented between the public and the private sector. And a lot of the interventions that we have included in the National Department of Health APP is to look at how do we address this problem statement. It also indicates that it's important that the health system of South Africa should be patient-focused, where we put the patient at the center, rather to continue to focus on the curative and disease-focused health system. With regards to the strategic plan, which was presented to the committee before, and the annual performance plan specifically for this presentation, we do have a few context documents that inform the annual performance plan. First of all, as mentioned in my first slide, is the National Development Plan, as well as the Sustainable Development Goals. And then for this period of government, 2019 to 2024, the medium-term strategic framework serves as the guiding document for the five-year building blocks within the 2030 National Development Plan. The MTSF has got two impact statements. The first one relates to universal health coverage for all South Africans progressively achieved and all citizens protected from the catastrophic financial impact of seeking health care by 2030 through the implementation of the National Health Insurance Policy. And the second impact statement is the overarching impact that we want to achieve with all health sectors, not only the national department, but the collective health sector interventions, is to increase the life expectancies of South Africans to be improved to 70 years by 2030. We recognize the NHI policy directive of government and noting the consultations on the NHI bill, which is currently led by Parliament. It also responds to key diagnostics documentation and processes, which is provided within the Presidential Health Summit Comment and Compact with its nine pillars that includes critical interventions that's been collectively developed through different stakeholders within the health sector of our country. Then there's also recommendations from the Lancet Policy Commission. There's recommendations from the Health Market Inquiry, as well as the platform or the analysis and report that comes from the South African Demographic and Health Survey. I'm going to go and present the key areas of focus for the 2023 financial year, as it has been included in the annual performance plan, which has been tabled in Parliament. The first program, Program 1, administration, Program 1 focuses on the support services for the functioning of the National Department of Health, and these include the human resources, development and management, in other words, the staff of the National Department of Health, labor relations services, information and communication technology services, to ensure that we can the Teams meetings and so forth, and other ICT support for the functioning of the National Department of Health, property management services, security services, legal services, supply chain management, as well as financial management services. Within Program 1, the first indicator relates to the audit outcome from the Auditor General of South Africa. And the target for 2023 is to receive an unqualified audit opinion for the 2021-22 financial year. Then the next two indicators relate to medical and legal. The first indicator is to prepare and develop legislation to manage medical legal claims in South Africa. And the next one is to continue with the rollout of the case medical legal case management system to be implemented in 8 of the 9 provinces. This currently excludes the Western Cape, as they are not participating in the process when the tender was awarded accordingly. The next indicator is with regards to the continuous communication with the public for preventative and measures, and specifically targeting at the reduction of the premature mortality due to NTDs, and to use our extensive social media platform to engage with the public. And for that, we have targeted 100 different health promoting messages that the National Department of Health will place and manage on the social media platform. The next set of indicators refers to employment equity, with a target of 50% of women at the senior management level to be appointed, 30% at the National Department of Health, 30% of youth to be appointed at the National Department of Health, and 7% of people with disabilities to be appointed at the National Department of Health. And this in the key focus areas as included in the ADP for Program 1. If we move to Program 2, Program 2 is the National Health Insurance, and the purpose of this program is to improve access to quality health services through the development and implementation of policies to achieve universal health coverage and health financing reform. Program 2, the first focus or intervention and objective and target is with regards to the legislative framework for the establishment of the NHS fund. And during the 2022-23 financial year, the National Department of Health will continue to participate in the public hearings as it relates to the NHI bill, and it's currently led by Parliament and its structures, and continue to support that process accordingly and as it is prescribed. The next two indicators refers to the availability of medicines. So the first one refers to the expansion of the central chronic medication dispensing and distribution program, where the target is to increase the number of people that participate or is registered in this program, that that be increased by an additional 1.3 million patients that's on chronic medication. The next one is with regards to the establishment of the NHI office at the National Department of Health, with a focus of 70% of the funded posts in the NHI organogram to be filled during this financial year. And then one of the next indicators refers to the monitoring and of the availability of medicines in health facilities. And this is where both at the district level, provincial level, as well as the national level, the facility, we, through the system that are being implemented, we can monitor the availability of the different medicines at each one of the facilities. So currently it's implemented in 3,850 health facilities, and this will be increased by 20 during the 2023 financial year. This is the end of the National Health and Children's Program. I will now move to Program 3, which is the bulk of the ACP, and this refers to communicable and non-communicable diseases. It focuses on the development and support of the implementation of all the national policies, all the national guidelines, norms and standards, and monitoring the achievement of the different targets that are being set by the provinces, and also with a focus on decreasing morbidity and mortality, which is associated with communicable diseases as well as non-communicable diseases. And it also is responsible for the development of strategies and programs to reduce maternal and child mortality. The first set of indicators refers to HIV. So it's a new intervention in terms of implementation of HIV self-screening facilities. And for the 2022-23 financial year, The target is to implement that program in 200 public sector facilities. Also, a new indicator is the implementation of focused men's health services, and this will be piloted at 10 facilities, and this is to improve access to health services specifically for men. And then the next one is with regards to the youth. Currently, the youth zones are implemented in 1,600 primary healthcare facilities, and during the 2022-23 financial year, we will increase that by an additional 400 primary healthcare facilities, working with provinces to have youth zones established at the primary healthcare facilities. The next set of indicators refers to TB. So the first one is relating to the TB treatment success rate. The estimated performance for the previous financial year was 80%, and the target is to increase that to 5%, with a target of 85% for the 2023 financial year. Continuing with TB, the focus area is the reduction on the number of drug-susceptible TB deaths. It's based on the data available. Information is that there is 14,853 deaths that is related to drug-susceptible TB deaths. The target is to reduce this with approximately 2,500, implementing critical interventions in terms of the TB program to reduce these deaths with approximately 2,500. Also, with regards to the number of people started on treatment, it's new people to be started on treatment. So the estimated performance for the previous financial year was 190,000. This will be increased in the 2022-23 financial year to 221,900 people to be started on TB treatment. The next part of the indicators relates to child health. So one of the key programs for the prevention of childhood diseases is the expanded program on immunization. The effectiveness of this is reliant on the cold chain capacity that's available through the supply of chain of the vaccines. This includes the depots, the sub-depots, and all the facilities. So what we are looking at, and this needs to be audited and ensured, that we do not have a break in the health cold chain capacity. So we are going to start with an annual audit to look at the cold chain capacity.
Yes. Please continue.
Thank you. So in all the depots and the sub-depots and 50% of the public sector hospitals, with a report that will be sent, approved by the Director General, communicated with the provinces in order to be able to ensure that the provinces can provide the corrective measures. Then there's a program that's been implemented using radio stations, promoting child health, with a specific focus on child nutrition, and it's a program that will be implemented. It's a 36-episode program that will be broadcasted in 10 radio stations. The next is with regards to the monitoring and implementation, working with the provinces to implement corrective measures, where as part of our monitoring processes as the National Department of Health, we find that the provinces are not reaching their targets as set in their provincial plans. And for this purpose, there will be quarterly review sessions with each one of the 9 provinces reviewing the child, youth, and school health program, and also the women, maternal, and reproductive health program. then also a program that is implemented started in 2023 financial year is the training of clinicians with regards to sexual and reproductive health, and the target is for 400 clinicians to complete one of the sexual reproductive health online training modules in terms of improving the capacity to deal with sexual and reproductive health. The next three focus areas is with regards to the COVID-19 vaccination program. We have set these targets. This is what we would like to achieve. We do have the vaccines, we do have the vaccination sites, we do have the vaccinators. However, it is around the public coming forward to be vaccinated, and therefore at the back end there is quite a lot of programs that are being implemented mobilizing the South African public to come forward for vaccination. The targets are 75% of adults 50 years and older vaccinated against COVID-19 for at least one dose, 65% of adults 35 to 49 years vaccinated against COVID-19 with at least one dose. We grouped the two younger populations to include the adolescents as well as the youth or the younger population. 12 to 34 years, 60% of them vaccinated against COVID-19 with at least one dose. The next program is with regards to the schistosomiasis mass drug implementation plan to be implemented and to be implemented in schools in terms of the program, having the plan to be developed and then facilitate the implementation of the plan at the provincial level. Then with regards to malaria, the target is to have two targeted sub-districts reporting zero local malaria cases. One is in Mpumalanga, and the sub-district targeted is Tabatshwayo. And the one other sub-district is in KwaZulu-Natal, and the sub-district targeted for zero local malaria cases is KwaZulu-Natal. And then if we look at the outcome of and reducing the premature mortality due to non-communicable diseases to be reduced to 26%. That requires us a 10% reduction, as also indicated in the medium-term strategic framework over the five-year period. So again, it is to work with provinces identifying critical areas that needs intervention as it is relates to the National Strategic Plan for addressing non-communicable diseases. The next indicator is with regards to mental health. We are aware that there is pressure on the number of beds for state patients. So the target for the 2022-23 is to have an increase on the new bed or capacity available for the admission of state patients into designated psychiatric hospitals, and then also the development and finalization of the National Mental Health Policy Framework that requires revision to be tabled and approved by the National Health Council. With regards to the food service policy, the target is for additional 100 hospitals, including 7 tertiary hospitals, to obtain at least 75% and above assessment score on the food services policy. That's the target for 2023. And then the last indicator on this is to develop the strategy together with, in partnership and together with stakeholders, develop a strategy of interventions to continue with the prevention and control of obesity in South Africa, and that will then be developed as well as published. That brings me to the end of Program 3, and we will now move to Program 4, which is primary health care. The primary health care program also looking at the legislation, policy systems, and norms and standards for the implementation of a uniform, well-functioning district health services. And that program also includes emergency health services as well as environmental health services. The key focus areas for the 2022-23 financial year, first of all, is to look at the status of implementation of the district health systems policy framework, which was for the period 2014 to 2019, and to do a comprehensive evaluation report with recommendations towards the next phase of the implementation and consolidation of the district health system in South Africa, which is part of also the preparation for national health insurance. Linked to that is also the establishment of fully-fledged district health management offices. Detailed guidelines have been developed, and this will now be tested within 18 districts, identified districts, health districts in the country. The next two indicators focus on community-based services. The first one is around the expansion on the primary healthcare facilities with ward-based primary healthcare outreach teams, where it will be increased in this financial year from 1,250 facilities with ward-based outreach teams to 2,700 during the 2022 or by the end of the 2022-23 financial year. And then the next critical area is, and we experienced it also during COVID, is to identify and follow up individuals, patients, clients that were put onto TB treatment as well as HIV treatment, and use the community health worker CADISH together with the ward-based outreach teams to identify these individuals and bring them back into the treatment regime. The target for the 22-23 financial year is 350,000. The next group of indicators refers to environmental health. The first one is with regards to the ports of entry and their compliance with international health regulations. A program has been implemented for self-assessment of each one of these ports of entry. It has been implemented in the previous financial year in 18 ports of entry. It will be expanded to 25 ports of entry during the 2022-23 financial year. And then the next indicator is with regards to the assessment of both all the metros as well as the total of metros and district municipalities, 26 of them, to be assessed for compliance to the national environmental health norms and standards with a report and recommendations with regards to improvement of areas around compliance with the normative standards of environmental health. The last indicator is with regards to emergency medical services, and again, this is to look at compliance with the Emergency Medical Services Regulations that has been published, and work with the provinces to prepare plans for corrective measures. The next program is Program 5, name is Hospital Services. It covers two main areas, which is the quality improvement for hospitals, and then the big components with regards to the health infrastructure, and also the National Tertiary Services Conditional Grant falls under this program. With regards to hospital services, it is to revise and relook at the 2014 regulation that was published with regards to the designation and classification of hospitals. Will be reviewed and it will be published for comment and for implementation or for approval. The next indicators refers to the infrastructure intervention. Just to indicate to the members of the committee that in the APP from page 91 to page 93, there are details of the 40 facilities as indicated in the second row. and the 21 hospitals, as well as the ones for maintenance that's in the next slide. So facilities and the indication of identifying facilities for construction and revitalization goes through a process which is required, a policy from government, that any infrastructure programs needs to go through the user asset management plan, where it goes through a process of assessing that. And for that purpose, it will go through the process, and 40 facilities have been identified through this process for construction and revitalization. And similarly, for the hospitals, there is 21 hospitals that for construction, that's what if there's a new hospital, or for revitalization, where there's additional features that needs to be included with regards to the hospital. And then the last one is with regards to the 120 public health facilities that will be maintained with the maintenance program, as well as reparations that needs to be done, or critical refurbishment. There's 120 public hospitals, is including clinics, hospitals, nursing colleges, EMS base stations, etc. And as indicated on page 91 to 93, there is details with regards to the specific facilities that will be covered under the infrastructure program. The last program is program 6, which covers planning, monitoring, and evaluation. It also focuses on the human resources for health program, looking at the different healthcare professionals and support staff, and also the nursing strategy component that's included in terms of the interventions as it relates to the nursing strategy. And then it also includes the oversight of the public entities, as well as the strategy and health professional council. With regards to the key focus areas for 2022-23, the first indicators relate to our oversight function as it pertains to the entities, as well as the, and the second one as it refers to the governance of the statutory health professional councils and public entities, where we will prepare a biannual governance report for each one of the statutory councils, as well as the public entities. First indicator is to ensure that the boards for the two entities whose term of the boards are expiring, that the boards are appropriately appointed, and that is the South African Medical Research Council and the Office of Health Standards Compliance. With regards to the training of nurses, this is to expand the nursing program and continue with the development of the nursing training program. The National Department of Health will support 9 nursing colleges to develop training plans for the nurse and midwife and specialist program. With regards to monitoring and evaluation, as per the National Health Act, the National Department of Health is required to publish on an annual basis the revised set of health research priorities that will be produced and working with the Health Research Council, and then to work on the development of a performance dashboard that is from a district level aggregated to a provincial level, aggregated to a national level, to continuously monitor, even at a lower level than just at the national level, the performance of the health system as it pertains to critical health service indicators. And then in terms of the broader quality improvement program, there's targets of 100 primary health facilities and 80 hospitals implementing the National Health Quality Improvement Program. The intention is to establish centers of excellence as it pertains to quality implementation and have an exchange program so that other facilities and management can learn from these centers of excellence in order to be able to replicate programs in other facilities. With regards your clinic program currently, or the estimated performance for 2021-22, is 2,100 primary health care facilities that qualify as ideal clinics. The target for 2022-23 is to increase that with an additional 100 primary health care facilities. With regard to human resources for health, the review of the community service policy with recommendations to be finalized during this financial year, a fairly complex process and program, and that this final report and recommendation be presented to the Technical Committee of the National Health Council, and then eventually with for consideration to the National Health Council. And then the National Department of Health, over the past 3 years, developed a fairly robust human resources information system, which is giving a platform where the human resources for health give details around the availability of human resources, the health human resources. And to expand this, the target for this financial year is to expand the utilization of this platform in the context of human resources for health planning. This is the end of the key focus areas for the 2023 financial year. And with your permission, Chairperson, I will hand over to the acting CFO to continue with the budget. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. With your permission, I will also mute my video just to make sure that I'm audible during the presentation due to load shedding. Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I think it's important for the honourable members to take note that the total budget allocation, Milani, if you can just pass it, if the total budget allocation for the 22-23 financial year is 64.5 billion rands, and that is to ensure that we do achieve the targets set out in the APP. Just for information, when we compare the 22-23 budget allocation against the final budget allocation, that is after the adjustment took place in the 21-22 financial year, there is a slight reduction of 877 million rand, or 1.34%. So as indicated by Minister, we as the National Department of Health is actually very grateful for the small reduction that we have received compared to other sectors and other departments who received a higher budget reduction due to the economical climate in currently in South Africa due to the pandemic. Chair, the total allocation as awarded by the National Treasury in the letter of allocation, ring-fenced allocations for earmarked funds, conditional grants, and indirect grants. In total, that amounts to 63.1 billion rands, or 97.8% of the budget allocated to the National Department of Health. As indicated by Minister, the greater portion of the budget, which is 56.2 billion rands or 87.2%, is allocated to conditional grants, and the actual expenditure for those activities will realize at provincial level. And we do have our monitoring systems in place and frequent meetings and engagement with provinces to ensure that the funds are being directed into the areas as stipulated in the Division of Revenue Act and the business plans which have been approved by NUH. Chairperson, I will then present the financial or the financial resources in accordance with the categories just for members to understand how the budget at national is composed in relation to the APP. So we have a voted fund, which is the funds basically for the core functions of the NDOH, and these funds, we at the NDOH do have discretion to do vitamins and shifting of funds in the course of the financial year as it might be required due to change in priorities. Then we have the earmarked allocations, which is earmarked by National Treasury, and there we cannot touch those funds. Those funds are completely ring-fenced, and it cannot be changed without approval from Treasury, together with parliamentary approval. Likewise, with the conditional grants, those funds flow to provinces, so the Department of Health, the National Department of Health, is managing these grants and ensuring that it is indeed directed into those areas that we have agreed upon with the provinces. And then we have the indirect grants sitting at the National Department of Health. These funds will be spent by the National Department of Health. Once again, those are strictly earmarked and cannot be used for any other purpose except for what it was appropriated for. Then we have a total for the department, which amounts to the 64.5 million rand check. So I also presented the program just to have a feel in terms of the APP on what portion of the budget is allocated to the various programs. The program one, we will sit with the 781 million rands. As indicated, that is basically for the support services of the National Department of Health. Then we have the NHI, National Health Insurance, sitting at 1.5 billion rand, of which 693 million is the conditional grant, and the 700 will be spent at the National Department for the indirect grants. Communicable and non-communicable diseases, we are sitting with a total budget of 26.9 billion rand, of which 24.1 billion rand is conditional grants, and 2.6 billion is earmarked funds. Primary health care, we have a total of 5.1 billion rand, 4.8 billion rand, a conditional grant going to the provinces. Hospital systems sitting at 22.6 billion rand, 21 billion rand going to the provinces as conditional grants for the facilities revitalization grant, and the 1.5 billion at national department for indirect grants. And then lastly, we have health systems, governance, and human resources, totaling at 7.5 billion rand, of which 5.4 billion rand conditional grant, as well as 1.9 billion rand sitting at earmarked funds. Chair, then traditionally we, in terms of the standards of Treasury and reporting systems, we also craft the budget in terms of the economical classifications. So in terms of economical classification, compensation of employees, the total allocation is 787 million rand, goods and services sitting at 3.9 billion rand. And then the transfers, and this is where the bulk sits in terms of conditional grants, is sitting at 58.3 billion rand. And then our capital, which includes the infrastructure, the indirect grants, is at 1.4 billion rand, totaling once again to 64.5 billion rand. On the voted side, we have an additional 1.379 billion rand, the earmarked 4.6 billion. Conditional grants is 6.2 billion, and then 2.2 billion going into the indirect grants. Chair, let me move to program before I get to that. At a high level, reasons for variances, I've mentioned that there is a slight decrease in our budget allocation compared to the final budget allocation for 2021-22. On the economical classification, the compensation of employees was reduced by 7%. However, that is mainly due to the fact that the forensic chemistry laboratories moved over to the NHLS as from the 1st of April 2022, and that represents the reduction. Then on goods and services, Chair, as we all know that COVID-19, relief funding that we've received in the previous budget, and therefore for the current financial year, the budget is reduced from 4.3 billion rand for the previous financial year into 2.1 billion rand for the current year. However, Chair, this is mainly for the procurement of vaccines, But Treasury has already indicated that should we experience any pressures in this area, that they have made provision for additional allocation that can be allocated to the department in the course of the financial year, and that will be then taken up in the adjustment budget. Furthermore, on the goods and services, some of the funds that was allocated to the NHI indirect grant was reallocated to the direct grant for NHI, which will then flow to the provinces, and then the human resource and training grant also benefited from the reallocation of the funds. Then, Chair, we have on our transfers and subsidies an increase in the conditional grant due to the reallocation of the NHI indirect grant to the NHI direct grant and human resource training grant. And that was mainly to cater for the statutory post that we continuously suffer to have sufficient budget to cover that expenditure. And then an additional amount of 758 million rands was allocated to the conditional grant for cash gratuity payment for those health workers who served the country extremely well during the pandemic. And then lastly, Chair, we have the purchase of capital assets, the capital funds for the health revitalization and national health insurance indirect grants were increased by 19% from 1.1 to 1.3 billion and 65% respectively from 19 million to 53 million rand from 21-22 to 22-23 financial year. If we then go into the programs in line with the APP as presented by Nalani, for program one, a total budget allocated of 781 million rands, and I think it's just important to list out here the earmarked amount for medical and legal committees or the function that is being performed at national to ensure that the system is there for medical legal so that we can manage those claims appropriately and ensure that the system is not being abused. So that money is set aside for the medical legal function at national. And then another earmarked amount is currently called SICA program, but it's more on the financial management support National is providing to the provincial health departments to ensure that we do have improved outcomes in audits, but also to ensure that we do maintain adequate and proper systems in supply chain and to make sure that we are in line with what is the requirements from National Treasury to ensure that we have a very efficient and effective utilization of resources. Chair, then we also have, once again, just the presentation in terms of the economical classifications. Out of the total allocation, 245 million will go towards compensation of employees, goods and service sitting at 494 million rand, and then the earmarks of 23 million rand. Then the total amount sitting at 781 million rands for Program 1 administration. If we move to Program 2, National Health Insurance, which is now a very important program in the National Department of Health, we do have, and we're very fortunate, Chair, that we did receive adequate funding for the current financial year to proceed with the implementation of the NHI. And there we have received in total 700 million rand. That is an indirect grant that will sit at national, where national departments will spend these funds in ensuring the implementation of NHI. Then we have 693 million rand, Chair, going into the conditional grants also for NHI. These funds will be spent at provincial level, and ensuring that the services being rendered is in line with what we are planning on NHI and getting everything ready for NHI. Okay, we have earmarked funds of 67 million rands, mainly the electronic medicine stock system that we have at national sitting at 10 million rands. And then we have the traditional NHI interim funds management. And this is basically to capacitate and ensure that we do have the structure to implement what is required in terms of the NHI fund, sitting at 41 million rand. And then we have the NHI health technology assessment, 15 million rand, which is also very critical for NHI going forward. In total, Chair, we have 1.5 billion rand sitting under Program 2 for the National Health Insurance Program. Once again, on the next slide is just an indication of how that is spread across the economical classifications, of which compensation of employees will be 45 million rand. Our goods and services will be 24 for national, 67 million for the earmark funds, and 646 million rand for the indirect grants. And then we have our transfer, which is the conditional grant going to the province for the NHI, 693 million, in total 1.5 billion rand allocated to Program 2. Program 3, Chair, communicable and non-communicable diseases, Chair, a total budget allocation of 26.9 billion rand. Chair, I think it's important for members who compare previous year's budget allocations, just for them to take note that the HIV, TB, malaria, and community outreach services grant was renamed in the current year to District Health Programs Grant. So this grant consists of two components, of which one component is represented in Program 3, and that is the comprehensive HIV and AIDS component, which is created, and that is mainly for the HIV and the TB components of this grant. And that amounted to 24.1 billion rand chain, which is transferred and managed by the provinces with oversight from the National Department of Health. And then we have earmarked funding, Chair, which is also a substantial amount going into some of our NGOs, LifeLife, Lifeline, Soul City, SANAC, and then HIV and AIDS NGOs. Then we also have our condom budget sitting there, 55 million rand, is also earmarked, as previously indicated, Chair, that none of these funds can be utilized by the National Department of Health. It is specifically and exclusively earmarked. Chair, under the COVID vaccine program, we've got 2.1 billion rand, mainly for the procurement of vaccines for COVID-19. Given our current stock levels, we might not consume that full amount, but in the event of changes, which is unpredictable and we never know, should there be a shortage, as I've indicated, pressure has already made provision for that, and that should not be a challenge for the department. We have the malaria elimination program project sitting at 27 million rand, Chair. And then we have the chronic diseases and prevention and health promotion earmarked funding sitting at 48 million rand, and this is what we usually call at national the sugar tax allocation, and these are the funds that we receive from Treasury due to the change in the sugar tax levy that was introduced. In total, we have 26.9 billion rand for Program 3. And I've indicated that the majority of these funds is conditional grant, 24.1 billion rand going out to the provinces. Once again, Chair, we also allocate this and reflect it according to the economical classifications, which is then for the COE. Milani, if you can just scroll to the next slide, please. COE will have a budget of 104 million rand, goods and services for the voters at the national department, 61 million, and then earmarks sitting at 2.3 billion rand. Transfers voted sitting at 3 million rand, and then 205 million earmarks, and then conditional grant sitting at 24.1 billion rand chair. That is taking us to the total allocation of 26.9 billion rand. If we move to program 4, primary healthcare services, Chair, I've indicated that the former grant was renamed to be the District Health Programs Grant. So the first component, the HIV component, is sitting in program 3. And here in the program 4 sits the District Health component, which is covering the community outreach services, malaria elimination, HPV vaccines, and a allocation for COVID-19, purely for provinces administering the vaccines and the functions that they are doing at a provincial level to cover those costs. In the previous financial year, it was sitting at 1.5 billion rand. And this is just to ensure that it's not necessary for provinces to absorb any additional cost coming from the COVID-19 pandemic impacting on their budget allocations. And that's the provision that was made for the grant, or a component in the grant. So in total, it's 4.8 billion rand share that will be going out to the provinces for a conditional grant. Once again, we reflect that composition and the economical classifications, Chair. And I think it's quite straightforward in terms of the larger amount that's going into the conditional grants. Program 5, Chair. Program 5 is our hospital systems. Once again, the greater part of the allocation to Program 5 is for conditional grants, 6.7 billion rand going into the revitalization grant. And the NTSG grant sitting at 14.3 billion rands, totaling to 21 billion rands going into conditional grants to provinces, Chair. I think just to note here, which is fairly important and that is really giving a good indication of the priorities, the Limpopo Academic Hospital, we have once again the indirect grant of 498 million rands, meaning that it's funds under the national supervision and responsibility to spend those funds in ensuring that the Limpopo Academic Hospital is indeed getting the attention that it required to ensure that we do build the hospital there. I think in total that is sufficient, 21.085 billion going into the provisional grant, totaling 22.6 billion rand for the hospital services budget. Chair, the last program, program 6, our human health system governance and human resources. I think let me just list out here once again the health professionals and training development grant sitting at 5.4 billion rands. Once again, it will go out to the provinces, and as I've indicated, there was a slight increase of 133 million rands to make provision for our statutory posts, which we all know here on here that remains a huge struggle to find adequate funding for this activity. However, there is continuous engagement with National Treasury to ensure that we do not run once again into challenges with regard to this grant. Chair, we also have the earmarked fundings for Program 6, which is really important, and Melanie did indicate and allude to that in her presentation, the health information, district health information system, which have an earmarked funding of 15 million rand. We have health system stress sitting at 17 million rands as a earmarked funding. And then we have our traditional public entities, which is still getting a contribution from the National Department of Health, so Office of Health Standards Compliance, National Health Laboratory Services, which now will include the Forensic Chemistry Laboratories, the MRC, and SAPRA is also getting the, let me call it, a subsidy from national department side. And then we have the traditional health practitioners Council. This is also an area where we still need additional funding, and we are in consultation and discussions with National Treasury on this specific item, which is sitting at 4.6 billion rand, and then we have the CTLD and there will be sub-program sitting at 63 million rand. In total, the allocation for program 6 is sitting at 7.5 million rand, of which 110 million rand is voted funds and under the discretion of the National Department of Health. Then lastly, Chair, the last slide from my side is once again just indicating how this 7.5 billion rand is allocated according to the economical classifications. Once again, it's evident that 1.9 billion rand is earmarked. We cannot touch that. It's specifically allocated, and then the 5.4 billion rand will go out as a conditional grant. Chair, that's all from the finance side. More details, and I think a lower level information will be provided in the budget vote by the minister. We thought let's just give the resource envelope to the members so that we can understand how will we achieve the targets as set out in the APP. Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you, Minister.
Chairperson, this is the end of the presentation, and I'm handing over back to the Director General. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tim. We will end our presentation here, and I will hand over to our Minister. Thanks.
Chair, that concludes the presentation. We will be ready to take any questions from the honourable members. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister and DG and CFO and Ms. Bomaran for the presentation. It's going to be a little bit long because we have quite a number of members who want to raise some questions with you and also get a discussion going. So I'll go straight on to it. Honourable members Ismail, Biela, Munyai, Clark, Van Staden, Tembekwayo, Abad, Sengwa, Chirwa, Siwela, Sukas, Wilson. I'm going to repeat Ismail, Biela, Munyai, Clark, Van Staden, Tembekwayo, Abad, Sengwa, Chirwa, Siwela, Sukas, Wilson. Honourable members, it is now 10:45. I'm not really going to restrict the time in terms of to make it earlier than what we had anticipated. So, but please still be mindful. I think it would not be correct to you know, have 15, 20 questions each. Then you can imagine where we're going to end up today. So let us then choose our questions in terms of priority. And hopefully we would be able to finish on time. Ms. Majalamba, I think that is we're planning on finishing at 1300 hours, I think, if I am correct.
Yes.
Yes, thank you very much. So, honourable members, I have noticed some of you are struggling with load shedding. When it does, when your time does arrive to speak and you're not there, I'll just move on to somebody else and come back to you at a later time. Thank you very much. In that order, you may raise your question and your discussion points. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, everybody. And thank you for the presentation to the department, Mr. Minister and his team. I must say the presentation is very interesting. I have a variety of questions. I'll try and keep it short and quick as possible. So my first question, slide 12. Under the outcome maternal, child, infant, and neonatal mortality is being reduced, what is the reasons for 2023, 2024, 2024, 2025 years stating not applicable? Will this program be then removed? Is there no target for this program in that year? My second question, The backlog of forensic psychiatric evaluation was 1,450 and 200 for state patients waiting for hospital admission in detention centers. Now, the most affected provinces were Eastern Cape, Gauteng, and KZN. How many new psychiatric hospitals are in the plan for 2022-2023 and 2024-2025 financial years? My third question, I know that are not applicable in certain in one column with regard to a national mental health policy framework being developed. Now, next year it is due to be tabled. Why is this year left empty? Has the department actually finalized the replacement for the National Mental Health Policy Framework and Strategic Plan 2013-2020, or is this still being worked on? My next question, what programs are being put in place and what budget is being allocated towards the prevention, treatment, and the treatment of substance abuse, including alcohol, as stated in the Sustainable Development Goals? My next question, please can you provide or advise on the department's cancer campaign and the impact of COVID-19 on it? You know, tell us more on the oncology services improvement plan as well as the obstetric services improvement plan. This is very important, you know, as we know in Gauteng particularly, we have a major issue with, cancer patients not being adequately equipped because of the Charlotte Makeke Hospital closing down. Now, with regard to human resources, there are still cases of interns and community service doctors not being placed timely. What are the reasons for this? And will the increases in these grant allocations assist to prevent this? I note in your presentation you have some plans where you're trying to mitigate future problems, but right now, what is going to be assisting? Is the grant allocation going to assist for this? Now, under the NHI, what has the department learned from the COVID-19 pandemic? And how will this learning be incorporated in the running of the department and the design of the NHI in particular? You know, please update us on the process of medical aid beneficiaries being registered on the HBRS system. And I see here one of the department's outputs is to ensure that 70% of funded posts in the NHI onogram are filled. Please, can you share the onogram with the committee so that at least we know and we updated, you know, we're in the loop of what is going on. Just on this point as well, the department claims that more than 50 million people are registered on its HBRS system. How was this actually achieved? You know, did the department work with the Department of Home Affairs? Has it got a proper database now? Is it actually properly compliant? You know, we would like to get a report on the spending of the NHI grant presently and where we are going with this. Quickly, under primary health care, the program budget has increased significantly. Is this program sufficiently capacitated in terms of human resources to spend and deliver services accordingly? How will the district health services be affected by the increase in budget? I'm really worried about the EMS services. You know, can the department provide a detailed report on the state of the EMS services in the country presently? And on nursing colleges, you know, please can the department provide a progress report on the training of nurses and the establishment of nursing colleges in the country, and also how did the challenges of changes in the curriculum or training affect the outcome? And does this new training model actually accommodate and include mental health? Because we know mental health is actually going forward, you know, especially after COVID, really affecting many, many citizens of South Africa or patients of, in South Africa. When it comes to vaccines, how much is the country investing in vaccine development? Is there a long-term strategy in place? And how is the department actually supporting the development of vaccines in South Africa? We had a presentation by the South African Medical Research Council, you know, and it's quite interesting to know exactly where the department is actually with all this. And with regard to HIV and AIDS and TB, how is the department measuring effectiveness of its HIV and AIDS and TB prevention campaigns, and how is the HIV program affected by the COVID-19 pandemic? And then my last two questions. Now we know that mining is a big culprit, you know, contributing to TB. And we know that sometimes, or most of the time, departments work in silos. So is a cross-sectoral initiative of, you know, if is the department working on anything in place, you know, with DMR and energy and correctional services to address TB in this country? Because without behaving, you know, unilateral discussions and responses, we're not going to be actually dealing with the TB, you know, TB is a communicable and non-communicable disease in the country. We can have a lot of plans to end TB in 2035, but we don't do something on the ground with other departments, we're not going to reach anywhere. And lastly, malnutrition is a major problem. What strategy is the department implementing to combat severe acute malnutrition? It's important that departments don't work again in silos, you know, but a cross-sectoral approach with departments such as social development, basic education and others, you know, actually sitting down together and working on solutions. Please tell us a bit more on this. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Jefferson. Allow me to not switch on my video camera due to poor network connection. We are having a load shedding. But Jefferson, I've got a few questions to ask the minister and the department. But firstly, let me appreciate and welcome the presentation that is being presented before us as portfolio committee members, and also appreciate the good work that the department is doing, although we know that there are a lot of challenges, but I think we must also appreciate your commitment, Minister, and also your department. You are there on the ground. We've seen you up and down doing the work, saving the people of South Africa, which we really appreciate. And I think also the people of South Africa also appreciate the good work that you are doing. Coming to the questions that I want to ask, as we welcomed the consistent advancement of the NHI policy by the ministry and efforts to strengthen our health system, how is the department closing the infrastructure gap, a lack of health adequate health worker capacity and the standards which will be required by the NHI? And when will our public health system, in particular be the NHI, ready also drawing from the experience of the NHI pilot? My second question, the recent audit general report reflected and skewered increase on the cost of medical legal cases in the Eastern Cape, while other provinces have been in a relatively low range. What are the specific weaknesses in the Eastern Cape, and how is the national department intervening on the anomaly? My third question, which is my last question, the 2021-2022 performance target on management of medical legal cases targeted 7 provinces on managing new medical legal things, but the current year of 2022-2023 targets 4 of the 8 provinces. Why has the target declined, and how was the implementation in the previous financial year in the 7 provinces? I'm not going to have many questions because time and time you are also briefing us as a portfolio committee. But I really appreciate the good work that you are doing. May Almighty God protect you and the team and keep it up, the service that you are doing for the country. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, Honorable Chair. My questions are as follows. Let me just try to set up my system properly. My questions are as follows, Honorable Chair. Number one, South Africa is a unitary state, and is not a federal state, and all the provinces are required to implement the national government policy. Why is it that the Western Cape is excluded from the promotion from the provinces which need to implement the cases management system of medical cases? Why the Western Cape is excluded from the, as one of the provinces which need to implement a cases management system of medical cases? That is the first point, Honorable Minister and Honorable Chair. In relation to the hundreds health promotion messages placed on social media on a premature mortality due to NPDs, the department identified YouTube as the target for 2023-2024, and the TikTok is in 2024-2025. The fact of the matter is that the social media platforms are vulnerable to shift as the new innovations are developed. In 2 years' time, new social media platform can be developed. We recommend that the 100 promotional messages should be spread through all possible social media platforms, including TikTok and YouTube, in the current year. That's our concrete recommendation. The indicator of performance in the area of promoting health messages should be targeted to the number of audience to ascertain outcomes such as for health promotion. What is the targeted reach for the health promotion messages? That is the question. In relation to the state pharmaceutical company, Itlapila, I know this is under the NEXA and the CMR. How many offtakes has the department reached with this company? And how does the department seek to position the company as a critical provider for medicine and other medical products to also encourage domestic manufacturing capabilities? In relation to the target program 3, find and treat people with TB disease at over 200,000, what is the impact of find and treat program relative to the risk of prevalence of the TB in South Africa? By the way, TB, other than the COVID-19, has been the biggest killer of our people. Why is the department discontinuing the side-by-side radio show in the outer years of the MTF? Which in other means, will be used to promote child health and nutrition, noting the levels of stunting in our country. Stunting in our country. That would be very helpful, because these radios, side-by-side radio show, it is very critical for the promotion of the child health and nutrition. So what are the interventions in place to realize the double target for 60% of young people, that is 12 to 34 years, vaccinated against? Oh, no, leave that one, Honorable Minister. But one critical issue that I want to raise, let's welcome the department's intervention relative to programs in the FPP, but we must put this this comment that the resources is not limitless. All the departments, national department, contest for the very same budget. I would have wanted to see more money than what is there now for national health insurance. But understanding the country's fiscal position, debt to GDP is almost 87%. There's a lot of debt that the Treasury needs to pay as an obligation for this country, and also to intervene in a number of services in the Republic. So within the limited resources, we think the department will do us proud to implement all the programs as anticipated within the ATT. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to apologize, I am now outside trying to do this meeting. We have load shedding, and if I have any animals barking, please excuse that. Firstly, what legislation is referred to on slide 6 with a reference to managing medico-legal claims? And just subsections to that question, please indicate how effective this legislation has been and how has the department managed to reduce these claims? Is there a regulatory framework in place in terms of legal teams appointed to deal with these claims, and the legal charges that our lawyers are charging us, are these charges capped at a certain rate? Has this legislation been able to curtail the collusion, fraud and corruption within these processes, and how many disciplinary cases are there and to what are there, and how has these disciplinary cases been managed, and what is the monetary value in terms of these cases? What consequence management has been put in place in terms of fraud and corruption during these processes, and what are the biggest causes of medico-legal claims, and how does these claims impact on the department's budget? The target for the number of registered patients in 2025 is 6.5 million. If the NHI is to be implemented in 2025, not even 50% of the population will be registered patients. Will the unregistered patients be denied access to the package of services offered? In slide 9, indicates by 2024, 3,870 health facilities will be available. Has a costing model been done in terms of the staffing of these health facilities? How will the department deal with critical care shortages within the health facilities, considering, and this is from a question I asked to Parliament, I got the answer yesterday, that we are short of 21,453 nurses in our healthcare facilities. My colleague has spoken at length in terms of the training of nurses, and I won't go into that because those questions have been asked. Then, can the department also inform us if the nursing staff that was employed during the height of COVID will be absorbed within the systems as we speak about increasing healthcare facilities, as there were many skilled nurses within that pool? Then, in terms of NHI, we speak about, when they did the financial presentation to us this morning, they speak about 1.5 billion rand in total allocated for this year. I want to know if proper costing has been done in terms of the NHI aligned with the social impact study to see what NHI is actually going to cost us. And, you know, in terms of the budget, when the Minister of Finance spoke in terms of the budget speech, he did not indicate any allocation to NHI. And I know that National Treasury has said that in this economic climate of South Africa, where we find ourselves in at the moment, it's highly unlikely that we're going to be able to afford what we need for NHI. So could I have, if any of those studies have been done? Then on slide 11, estimated performance for 2021-22 is not applicable. What is the reason for this field being empty? Then maternal mortality has increased from 88.3 deaths per 100,000 to 109.8 deaths per 100,000. What plans does government have in place to significantly change the trajectory of this statistic as per objectives on Programme 3? Then in terms of slide 14, how will government ensure that the vaccine programs are strengthened in order to achieve its targets within the APPs? We are seeing a resurgence in the numbers, which is to be expected as we move into our winter months. At this stage, we've seen an increase around 13.4% in stats in the last sort of week or two. Can the department please also keep the committee updated in terms of the increase, not just in terms of stats, but in terms of data and causes of this increase? Slide 16, targets, you speak about implementing a national mental health policy and targets set for patients. How does the department aim in reaching these targets if hospitals are not capacitated to treat mental health patients? How will the capacity be strengthened in order to achieve these outcomes? And then in terms of the NHI grant, what was the grant spent in the last financial year, and what was the amount returned back to National Treasury due to non-expenditure? Chair, I'll stop there because I've got so many questions and I do realise we only have a time limit. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm keeping my video off due to power outages. I only have 5 questions for today, so I'm the champion on the not the most questions for today. On my first question, what plans does the department have in place to eradicate the vacant post of nurses in state hospitals, but currently amounts to 10,831, as reported by the minister to me on the 17th of March, and also the vacant post of doctors, doctors, that amounts to 1,339. My second question, what plans does the department have in place to get rid of corruption in the national department and the provincial departments? I think it's necessary to talk about that matter because it's always have a stringe on this department's budget. And with my third question, it seems that there are currently a challenge with mentally health facilities due to the small numbers of availability of such facilities across the country. I just want to know what is currently in the planning stage to get more mental health facilities up and running across the country. We saw what happened also, as my previous colleagues has mentioned, with Charlotte Maseki's closure and the pressure which was put on, I think, on Alan Joseph's hospital and the media reports that came out of there. My fourth question is, what is the latest in terms of legal claims against the department? In other words, what is the amount currently spent on legal claims? I think it's a matter which also needs to be addressed. And my last question is, how many health facilities in KZN are currently affected by the floods, and what is the current pressure of these facilities due to the floods? Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the department for their presentation. My questions are as follows. Is there a long-term strategy in place for the country to invest in vaccine development? How is the department supporting the development of vaccines in South Africa and Africa as a continent? How is the country dealing, preparing to deal with other variants of COVID-19 entering the country and possible next waves? Has there been any assessment concluded that the department can share with us pertaining to the impact of April 22 flood on the health system? How is HIV program affected by the COVID-19 pandemic? Has the department modeled the impact? What is the implication of fewer people receiving testing and treatment this year? And the last one, is there a cross-sectoral approach with the department, such as social development, basic education, and others being utilized pertaining to the department's strategy of combating severe malnutrition? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Chairs, thank you for the opportunity, and also thanks the minister and the team. I have 2 questions. First one, what are the effects of healthcare treatment of undocumented migrants on planning and budgeting? And how does the department plan for such circumstances? And what effects does it have on our health capacity? Second question, what programs is the department implementing in relation to digital transformation, Note that the spectrum release will ease access to connectivity, thus creating capacity to digitize health systems management and other technology innovations. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. First of all, let me welcome the briefing by the department. It was very informative and interesting, and yes, it's very informative. Let me switch on my video because on my side it's not good. I have a couple of questions. A clarity-seeking question, Minister. It is about the mortality in cases and more special in King's Edwayo. If you can tell us more about that. And still in KZN, how is the National Department intervention on closing of the hospital, an old one and a renovated one called St. Francis at Mahlabakini, at Ulundi, and some clinics? Third one, tell us more about the plan of the department in primary health care, more special TB and HIV AIDS treatment in schools. We had about 400 groups of nurses trained, but we want to know, where are they? What is their provinces? So that we know exactly these groups comes from. Because now we have a lot of nurses which are lying there at home, not absorbed, even the doctors. Number five, is there a group of health? There is a group of health care called Onompilo. Those people, they go out, do door to door, help the sick person, but what is their status as of now in KZN? They reject them. Well, I want to know the status of these people because now they are desperate, but they are the forefront of the health. I want the intervention of the department in terms of capacity strengthening, because some of them are still young, they can be absorbed by the department and go for training as nurses. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to everyone present in this meeting. I would like the department to report on the Obstetric Services Improvement Plan, particularly because of the issue of forced sterilization, firstly. Can we have an update on the healthcare that's also provided, or subsequently to that, the healthcare that's being provided to the victims of the NDOH regarding forced sterilization? We send the department their names and contact details of those victims who still suffer consequences of being forcibly sterilized. Has the department contacted any of them and provided them with the necessary health care they need? If not, why is this the case months later? And I also want to follow up on why the department isn't speeding the issue of compensation for the victims of forced sterilization. And on the issue of obstetric violence as well, I want to raise again the issue of surgical mesh, and in particular, transvaginal mesh. I've been raising it for quite some time now, and even asked the department together with SAPRA to investigate the situation, because the FDA evokes the use of transvaginal mesh, and there's other countries who evoke the use of transvaginal mesh. and in South Africa still being done despite the issues that have been raised time and time and again. In other countries like Canada, there's corrective surgeries being done to people who suffer from having transvaginal lesions due to the incident. Can I have an update on this particular thing, what the Department of Health has raised it months ago, together with the issue of pink lymph nodes? And then, because I think all of this particular thing also falls under the issue of aesthetic violence. And I think the department isn't taking issues of aesthetic violence quite seriously. And in relation to that as well, termination of pregnancy is not available in three provinces, Eastern Cape being one of them. Can the minister tell us, or the department tell us, when will this be resolved? Because it cannot be that there's three provinces in this country where women don't have access to terminating pregnancies, and they have to travel outside of their province to have access to termination of pregnancy. And another issue, the NHLS reported that they were able to enforce cleaner and security guards, which some of them have asked them to do since 2019. They eventually did it. I want to find out from the department, because we've also been raising the issue of enforcing of cleaners and security guards with them as well, which what is the update on that? Is there an intention to do that from the department? And if so, when will we see this process unfolding? And if not, why isn't this being considered? Especially noting the exploitation that they go through these tendering companies who don't pay them what they're supposed to be paid, when they don't have benefits of workers, but these people work for the Department of Health, essentially. The issue of neonatal deaths was raised, I think, by a previous speaker. Can you also please update the committee regarding the fire at Health Network Hospital and its restoration to services? There are reports also in relation to that. There are reports of a cancer treatment crisis in housing following the fire at Health Network Hospital. What is the department doing to mitigate the impact? And lastly, how is the department addressing the issue of climate change and its impact on health needs and services? In particular, how is the department implementing sustainable practices in its work, including the development of new buildings and infrastructure? I'm asking this particular question because the NHI does not address the issue of developing already existing infrastructure and or building new hospitals and clinics. And this is an issue because with the NHI, people who are in township, rural areas, and former citizens will still be exposed to the current public health care systems because there aren't many private hospitals. And this is something we need to address and have answers for, especially in the public health care sector, because our buildings, our equipment, and issues, we raise these questions, obviously, through weekly questions to the minister, in particular, like raising a peculiar or particular instances where these issues need intervention. But on a national scale, what is the plan on fixing this particular issue? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Let me also welcome the presentation by the department. It was very informative. I hope that the department will be able to achieve all the set targets as outlined in the APP. However, I've got two or three questions to ask. The first question is, drawing from the experience of the pandemic, our healthcare system has had to endure and adapt to conditions of constraint, yet they were resilient, and so did our health workers and your leadership as the ministry. What lesson have you learned? Have you drawn from the experience to improve our public health care system to manage pandemics as we are in a period scientists have projected as a period of pandemics and disasters? The second question is, how is the department supporting the use of domestic health care products and innovation in the healthcare supply chain? Thirdly, how is the department supporting the Nelson Mandela Fidel Castro Medical Collaboration Program, and what is the extent of the impact of these important programs for health skills development in our nation. Lastly, what are the timelines of the various bills which the executive is also focusing on, such as the control of marketing of alcohol beverage bill, the liquor amendment bill, the cannabis for private purpose bill, traditional health practitioners amendment bill, health ombuds bill, and the Office of the Health Standards Compliance Bill? Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, and I want to join my colleagues in thanking the department for the presentation. I'm going to limit my questions to four questions. The first question I want to ask is around the quality improvement for hospitals. This formed part of was a priority in the previous financial year, and I would like to know what steps are taken to improve quality care at health facilities, given that the DOH has had this as a priority and focus in the last financial year, as I said, to improve quality care. So what steps have been taken, and is there a measurement that the department has in order to see the steps that they've taken, whether there has been any improvement? We are receiving, or I am at least in my constituency, receive on a monthly basis complaints in terms of the quality of care that they receive at hospitals. Then secondly, could you provide an explanation for the indicator to reduce the number of drug susceptible TB deaths annual target to the committee? Thirdly, the health targets in line with the sustainable development goals in terms of the treatment of substance abuse, including narcotics, drug abuse, and harmful use of alcohol. If the department can provide us an outlay of what the DOH's plans are, and like my colleagues indicated with the questions that they've asked, whether there is an intersectoral plan to address these. Also, in terms of just to hang on to that same question, or to look up to that same question, what we are seeing is an increase in mental health cases, and we know that the capacity of our hospitals and the capacity of our institutions are very low. What is being done to improve mental health care, especially at the primary care level? I know that in my district, for instance, where my original constituency, we struggle to have a mental health nurse for a period, for a very long period, and people couldn't get those services. So what is being done to upscale training and capacity, especially, like I say, at the primary care level? I think Honourable Kiwa did, mention the termination of pregnancy. I want to make a comment. In 2019, when I came in to this term as an MP, there was a case of a young doctor who provided full counselling, to a woman seeking termination of pregnancy. That young doctor was penalized, and he was never signed off, and his medical career was stopped for the last 5 years because of his emphasis on giving full care to a patient. And it is an indictment that such a young doctor has been refused entry into the medical profession on the basis of his faith. So I want to make that comment because I highlighted it in the very first, I think, year of this Sixth Parliament, our doctor, of course, was discriminated against, and it is an indictment. So I want to add that comment there, since the issue of termination of pregnancy was brought up. And also ask what is being done to ensure that women get full counselling when they seek termination. Not only the termination of the pregnancy, but the wellness of the mother. How is the department making sure that the wellness of women in terms of pregnancy is ensured? Then lastly, in terms of the impact of HIV/AIDS programs and COVID-19, there is a need, especially, and if the department could comment, if they are tracking the compliance and especially of teens living with HIV and AIDS, and especially in the school health program, how many young teens that are living with HIV and AIDS are staying with the treatment or falling off the treatment because of the fact that they are emotionally struggling with, you know, living with the reality of HIV/AIDS as they are growing. And the reason I ask this is because of a particular case that happened in 2020 where a young young teen living with HIV/AIDS dropped off his treatment because of the manner in which he was treated when he visited the health facility. No confidentiality, having, you know, to face sitting in lines that is specifically for people living with HIV and a total lack of sensitivity. How is the department ensuring, in terms of their priorities, that you are focused specifically on the school health program and especially teenagers living with HIV and AIDS for them to, you know, overcome to comply with their treatment. I am thankful for seeing that the primary health care, that there is an increase that goes to 5.2 billion in terms of primary health care. If the department can give us an indication what they are doing to increase staffing capacity at this level and what are they doing to address the morale of staff serving at this level. I've just indicated the issues that young people face if they live with a disease and they need to get treatment and you're being treated like, you know, without sensitivity. And a lot of it is to do with a staff that is overwhelmed. What is being done to address the morale of staff, to increase training and to improve quality services and operational standards at a primary healthcare level? Because we get, like I said, a lot of complaints about how people are being treated at primary health care. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation from the Department of Health. As you can see, I've had to pull off on the highway to ask my question. So please bear with me. And through you, Chair, to the Minister and to the presenters. You know, it's very easy to put stuff on paper. It's very easy to set targets, and it's going to say we're going to do this, this, and this, and we're going to meet this and this and this kind of target. But until such time as we are prepared to get out of our chairs, put our tassies on, and hit the tar, we are not dealing with the crisis in health in South Africa. And I want to give you a few examples. Let me start with the Livingstone Hospital. It is a nightmare. The likes of Smith & Nephew and several other major medical suppliers have refused categorically to do any more deliveries to the Livingstone Hospital, and I'm not sure that the Livingstone Hospital is the only one, because they have not been paid. And according to some of the people we've spoken to, they haven't been paid for 6 months. The surgery departments, the theatres, the orthopedics have come to a standing halt. We have a little chap there who's 4 years old lying in that hospital. He was supposed to go into surgery 5 days ago. They wouldn't feed him, they wouldn't give him anything to drink because he's going to theater. 4 days later, he still has not been in that theater. They give him a little bit to drink and eat at night, but don't want to give him too much because he's going to theater. How do we subject children and other patients to that kind of treatment in our hospital? The DA called upon the Department of Health and the Minister to declare to put the Eastern Cape under administration 2 years ago during the Scooter debacle. Now we sit with an entirely different debacle. Honestly, Minister, somebody needs to do something about it. I recently did an oversight of the Philadelphia Hospital in Limpopo. What a shambles. Apart from the fact that that hospital is dealing with three provinces, it's supplying medical services to three provinces, there's no memorandum of agreement all funding coming from the two adjoining provinces. But that is the hospital with the highest number of stillborns, cerebral palsy cases, medical ego claims. And it is not surprising. While I was there, I was in the maternity ward. There is no theatre for the maternity ward. While we were there, a woman was in such a state, she needed urgently a emergency seizure. The theatres were full and busy. She lay for 4 hours waiting for an emergency seizure. Her uterus ruptured and the baby died. How is that? And you mentioned in the presentation, we want for South Africans a long and healthy life. Half the children, they don't get to get life. They don't get to get life. Or they are mentally challenged for the rest of their lives due to cerebral palsy. What are we doing about that? Rob Pereira Hospital is a nightmare. Their oncology department has got a backlog that you cannot even begin to describe. That hospital is literally sentencing people to death. Honestly, I'm going to lecture Charlie's clinic on Monday morning. People there at that clinic are getting sicker and sicker. We have now established that the borehole that was put into that clinic by the Department of Health is so badly contaminated with sewage that the people who've been going to that clinic to get care, who sit there in 37 degree heat, drinking the water there, or ended up being made sick by the Department of Health, you're supposed to help me. Steve Biko Hospital. I don't even want to go to the cases that we are dealing with. It's little wonder we have got medical claims. It is little wonder we've got medical claims. And when your medical claims start to way exceed your budget for medical legal claims, or in fact it doesn't, it way exceeds the department's budget full stop, then we must know that we've got a problem. And even if only 45% of those medical legal claims are paid out, the department's crippled. It's crippled. And you cannot bring lives back. We cannot be losing lives in the circumstances to minister and everybody else on this portfolio. No amount of money brings back lives. And I have asked for a report on the first forensic chemical laboratories that we've taken over. The reports that we are getting from those facilities is shatteringly bad. There's been a huge amount of corruption. The facilities are disgusting. We've got labs in condemned buildings, so I have asked for that report. We have had, I raised that in the presentation. The other thing we're getting more and more and more of is sexual harassment cases. I referred one just last week to both you, the minister, and to the DG, to which I have not yet had the grace of a reply or notification that my correspondence has already been received, to the point where nurses and surgeons, women in the services who are being intimidated or harassed by doctors and consultants, to the point where they won't even put in those ladies' logbooks. They're denying them the opportunity to write their final exam. I would like to know, please, from the department, how many sexual harassment cases they are aware of and what is being done about that. One of the things we have a huge problem with, and we are seeing more and more of this, is medical waste. We need to seriously assess the tenders and where this medical waste is going to, because we are now visiting sites where medical waste is being dumped where it shouldn't be dumped, and that is just a horrendous situation. And just lastly from my side, Chairperson and the delegation, it's interesting to see how much money has been put forward for NHI implementation. And I find this fascinating, particularly because the NHI hasn't been passed. We are nowhere near implementation stage, nowhere near. We still need to do a clause-by-clause discussion around that NHI and the constitutionality of some of those clauses. It is nowhere near really going to go to Parliament, let alone to President NCOP or anything else. So I would really like to know what those funds that that say they for NHI implementation are actually going to be used for, because at this stage the NHI is not implemented and I don't think it's anywhere near getting there. I thank you, Chair.
honourable members, did I leave any member out? If not, thank you for your raising your questions and your concerns with the minister and the department. So I also have about four questions to ask. The one is on the infrastructure development project. The second one is on compliance of provinces of certain environmental health norms. And my third one is on the DOTS program and the loss of clients of TB and HIV treatment. And the fourth one is on COVID vaccination of those between 12 and 34 years old. Well, my first question, Minister, we note that the infrastructure development project and the maintenance plan implementation targets are part of the key diagnostics provided by the Presidential Health Summit, and that these projects are critical to healthcare service delivery. What can the department do to attract more funding for the public healthcare system as a contribution to the infrastructure fund? And which programs are receiving such support to mitigate the budget constraints of the department? On my second question, on the compliance of the provinces on the level of compliance on national environmental health norms and standards, which is set at 75%, what is the level of compliance of the 9 provinces? And on the question on TB and HIV treatment, what is the extent of the number of clients lost to follow-up for TB and HIV treatment, and what are the causal factors of this, and how can the causal factors be addressed beyond community participation and beyond the work of the community health workers, and what is the impact of the community health workers are they having on this program? And then what are the interventions in place to realize the target of 60% of young people between the ages of 12 to 34 years old in terms of vaccination against COVID-19? And specifically, I note the low uptake by the youth. Now, I know we've had many questions being asked by all of the members combined. We have 1 hour and 20 minutes left, Minister. We look forward to those responses. Hopefully we can finish maybe at about 1:05 for the latest, so that I can also make some announcements. Thank you very much. Please proceed with those responses.
Thank you, boss. Thank you. I'm just estimating that we probably have upwards of 70-something, between 70 and 80 questions. I've asked the DG to start. I know that the Deputy Minister is in KZN with its flood disaster areas, especially the health facilities. So if he's still on, he'll also come in whenever it's possible. DG, can we just start able to allocate? I know with almost 80 questions, might be. Very quick, very fast numbers were speaking very fast. I hope you were able to capture, and I've tried my best. And if I can just invite you to start with those who you have identified to start, and then I'll note where there are gaps, and then I'll come in. Did you?
Thank you very much, Minister, and thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members. We have clubbed questions from different members into a number of ways, but I thought there is a few that I can just dispense off with. there is a question from a member that relates to a particular case of sexual harassment and someone being refused to write a resignation to the registrar. We are actually working with the relevant province on that case. Actually, that case has been elevated to presidency, and there is a special task team that has been put together that includes the relevant law enforcement agencies, and we do have one of our advocates from the department being involved in that case just to follow it up. I must say that the department has a zero tolerance policy on issues of gender-based violence, especially in the workplace. So we are taking every reported case seriously, and we ensure that the relevant law enforcement agencies are involved, whilst we also activate our own corrective measures internally in the department. So we will update once the high-level team that has been put together, led by the presidency, finalized their work. But I'm in constant contact also with the head of the department, who has provided a full report to that presidential staff team that is working on that particular case. And then the second one that I would like to quickly dispense on the honorable members, there is an issue that was raised by Honorable Shengwa on the issue of St. Francis Hospital, which is in Konjeni. I must just take the members back that the issue of rationalization of services has been ongoing in the province, actually in most provinces. As the members will even recall, if you look at Peter Maritzburg, some time back there were three hospitals, which was Grace, North Bay, and Eden Bay. Because it was not efficient to run all of them, running all four services, then they were designated district, regional, and tertiary, so that there is no duplication of services. A similar exercise was done in Newcastle with Matateni and Newcastle Hospital, where Newcastle was dedicated as a mother and child hospital, and then Matateni dealt with all the other cases of the regional hospital. Similarly, in King Tedwaro, the similar case was done with the two hospitals, the Queen Nandi and Welizane, and Queen Nandi was developed as a mother and child hospital, and then Welizane dealt with all the other general cases, but was also developed as a regional hospital. So the similar issues being done with St. Francis and Konjeni, because they are closer, to ensure that there is no duplication, but also there was a rationalization in terms of the management that probably because of the size of St. Francis Hospital, they needed to be the rationalization. They don't have to have a full set of management, but other issues can be looked after by Konjeni. Probably what might have been an issue that the province has been advised to deal with is actually the communication with the stakeholders and ensure that even the Health Portfolio Committee in the province is aware of what is happening. But we must assure the member that the hospital is not being closed, and there is no plan of closing the hospital. It's just the rationalization of services in that area between the two hospitals, as the other one is just across in Mashona, so they are close to each other. That is that one. And then the third one that I would like to dispense with is the issue of from Honorable Tilibayo, which is the issue of the impact of the flood on KwaZulu-Natal. And the Honorable Minister, accompanied by the Deputy Minister and the MEC, did a visit to the province, and there was a good presentation. The main effect is that a number of facilities that are around 56 have been affected in terms of their infrastructure, the flooding, the leaks, and others because of their roads that are leading to the hospitals. And there has been a team, infrastructure team, led by our head of infrastructure, Mr. Dagera, who will come in later, and has done some initial assessment, and there is already work being pushed, and there has been a meeting with Treasury to try and see what assistance can be put in. But the other area that the minister spoke of, which is very important, the issue of the supply of water into the facilities. A number of facilities have been affected, with Prison GM being one of those facilities, and they have been ready to be supplied by the water tankers just to ensure that work continues. But we know that obviously if water is cut, there's always some issues that we need to be dealing with. It's not only the hospitals that we ask through the municipality and the Department of Water and Sanitation that we do get priority and their facilities in terms of those facilities that need water to be done. I think the third aspect that was impacted was our forensic services. In terms of they had to deal with an increased number of autopsies. As we all know that by law, any unnatural death, we need to have an autopsy or a post-mortem done. But we must applaud the province and the department that has been able to clear the backlog. And we had to bring in extra capacity in terms of private pathologists to clear those post-mortems. There is ongoing work, of course, that with the displaced people that have been put in schools and in some of the halls that we did visit with the minister. We are providing outreach services in terms of health services in that area to ensure that we don't lose them. That's part of the work that the deputy minister is involved in KwaZulu-Natal as we speak. And then the last one, of course, that we need to be forward-thinking on, is the issue of the forward thinking that needs to have a forward thinking on is the issue of the possible outbreak of enteric diseases, which is common after the flood. That's your cholera, your salmonella, typhi or typhoid fever, and also looking at all the other E. coli related diseases, Shigella, and all those diseases. So obviously what's more important there is the issue of the water. How do we ensure that water is purified since there is a problem with the supply of water. So our teams of environmental health are working closely with the municipalities and water and sanitation to ensure that we prevent the outbreak of those diseases. So that is those are the few that I want to take. But with your indulgence, Honorable Chair, I'll request as follows. That there's a number of questions that relate to NHI, pharmaceutical services, the NHI grant, and all the issues that have come up, including the vaccination. Dr. Nicholas Chris is going to be the first one, and he will deal with all those issues that relate to that. Then the second one will be the issues that relate to medical claims, and there's quite a number of questions that came on that area, and I will ask Ms. Valerie Rennie, she's going to be dealing with those questions. And then there is a group of questions that relate to HIV, to TB, maternal and child health, which includes issues of maternal mortality, the CGE report, and Dr. Zuki Pinini will deal with those questions. And then questions that are related mainly to primary health care, health promotion, environmental health, and other related issues will be dealt with by Mr. Morewane. And then he will then be followed by the issues that relate to infrastructure, in terms of all the infrastructure related matters that will be dealt with by Mr. Takela, who's our head of infrastructure and facilities management. Then there were issues around nurse training, shortage of nurses, and the number of nurses being trained, where are they, where they come from. Ms. Pakiso, Nemati Banani is going to deal with those questions. Then there is a specific question that talks about procurement on how we look at local products into the supply chain system. And I request that that is dealt with by Ms. Dikereti Chabalala, who is head of our supply chain. That is that would be the order of the questions. And I will then request that Dr. Nicholas Chris start and we follow that order. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG. Good morning to the Honourable Chair and members of the committee, as well as to the Minister, Deputy Minister, colleagues and members of the media. So I hope I don't miss out. I was noting what the DG's asked me to respond to. I'll start with the Honourable Ismail's questions about national health insurance and what we've learned from COVID that we would take forward. So there were a lot of lessons. The first one is that we are one nation. We are not nine different provinces, and the public and the private sector need to work together. And we've shown that not only can we, but we can extremely effectively. And the levels of cooperation between the public providers and the private providers during this time has been exemplary, and I would like to thank everybody who's been involved in that process. What we've also learned is that the digital systems to manage the health system must be integrated. And during this time, the EVDS, the stock visibility system, and the DACOV reporting system for admissions and management of cases has all been one single coherent system that the public and the private sector players all participate in. Without that, we would never have been able to plan, and it has been possible for all participants to see the same dashboards at a very refined level of detail. That's been a very important learning during this time. There have been others around how to handle large volumes of vaccines in a short space of time. We've also had to handle very much colder vaccines than we've ever handled before. And learning those logistics pathways and how to procure and distribute during this time has been very important. We've also learned the resilience of our chronic medicines distribution system, notwithstanding the lockdown and the constraints. And there's something for us to strengthen, and I'll deal with that a bit later because there was another question about it from another honorable member. So there have been many lessons, but I won't go into any more of them. As far as the medical aid beneficiaries on the HPRS is concerned, there's a legal challenge to the way in which it was intended, and that would require an amendment to the legislation, which will have to come back to the House for honorable members to debate. But in the meantime, what we do have is the private sector have established a health information exchange, which is linked to the public sector health information exchange, and we're working on making that a smoother transfer. And what that means is that we all know which people in the country are on medical aids on a given day, never mind on a weekly or a monthly basis. So there's a lot of work to do to make that flow smoothly, and it has been extremely effective so far in the reimbursement of the vaccination program. So again, another success of collaborating and working closely together. The question was asked about wanting to see the organogram and 55% of the staff filled. The organogram is still under development. It is with the discussion between the Department of Public Service and the National Health Department. The acting CFO showed a figure of 41 million rand that has been set aside to establish a number of posts for critical skills in the space, and that will all happen now in the next couple of months. As I said, it's not entirely within the health department's, only in the health department's domain, between ourselves, the National Treasury and DPSA, but we're happy with the progress we are making and with the collaboration with the departments concerned. As soon as that is finalized, I'm sure we will share it with the honorable members of the committee. So there was a question asked also by Honorable Ismail about the HDRS and how did we achieve the 57 million people who are on the system. There's very close cooperation. First of all, people come to health facilities and they get registered at the health facilities. This has been going on for several years already, so a lot of people come to the facilities on a daily basis and register themselves. There are also databases that we use in our HIV, TB, immunization and other programs where we can cross-correlate and triangulate the memberships as we load them. But we have a very close working relationship with the Department of Home Affairs, who's primarily responsible for the registration of people. So cleaning up those databases together has made it possible, and also the Department of Social Development, where we both look after people with disabilities and many of the elderly. So there's quite a lot of correlation and triangulation of these databases. Is it POPI compliant? Yes, it's POPI compliant. We're very strict on this, and the Auditor General monitors what we do and engages with us while we are busy with the system. In other words, not retrospectively, but while we are busy making the changes on the system, and their digital teams are working closely with us to check that whatever we're doing is properly documented and compliant. It's not just the POPIA legislation, there's other legislation we must comply with as well. Regarding the spending on the NHI grant, there was also a question asked on this by by Honourable Wilson, so maybe I'll just talk about it. The bulk of what has been spent and approved by the House, by Parliament over the last 4 or 5 years, that is labelled as NHI conditional grant, is health system strengthening to prepare for the improvements that are required for the national health insurance. So if one goes into those conditional grants, this year's budget starts on page 153 of the document, and there's a substantial list of very detailed descriptions of the conditions on these grants, and those were adopted. That is tabled by the Minister of Finance, and it is adopted by Parliament. So perhaps what would be useful is if we have an engagement session where we go through them one at a time so that we can elucidate in greater detail what is system strengthening. There are components of it. Part of it is the strengthening of the primary healthcare environment. Part of it is specifically on mental health in the community. There's also a section dealing with oncology services and so forth, HIV, AIDS, TB. It is all under the auspices of strengthening the health system and improving services for national health insurance. And all that it means is that this money is not going through the provincial equitable shares, but it's going through designated funding either directly to the provinces or through an indirect grant spent by the national department. It's quite complicated, so I'm not surprised that it's quite hard to track and trace what's going on. Even for us sometimes, we really got to keep a mind on what we are following. I'll go to Honourable Ismail's question on vaccine development very briefly. So vaccine development is something that we are engaged with the Department of Science and Innovation. They are the primary lead on this, and there are a number of vaccine development programs going on. There have been quite a lot in the media lately because of COVID, but it's not only COVID vaccines we are interested in. The big and very well-known prominent projects are AfriGen, which is a partnership program based in Cape Town, of which the state participates along with universities and other bodies. Then there's the BioVac, which is a partly owned state company where the Department of Science and Innovation holds shares in that company. They're a very important partner of our COVID, but they're also a very important partner in the delivery of other vaccines for us. And they are busy with vaccine development and a refrigeration freezer farm, as they call it. Then there's the NANT SA, which is an American-based company with a South African-born philanthropist who is investing in vaccine development in South Africa. And the fourth one is the Gqeberha plant of Aspen, which started off with fill and finishing of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine now for COVID, that is now moving into the capabilities and licensing arrangements to do further vaccine work in the country. So there's a lot going on, this org as well, not just for South Africa, but for SADC and the rest of Africa. We are partners with the various bodies, including the African and international through COVAX and so forth. So there's quite a lot happening in that space. Honourable Geller asked about health worker capacity and when will the public health system be ready for national health insurance. So the answer to the question is very long and complicated, and we have debated it a bit when we responded to the questions around the national health insurance bill. The point of it is that it's a long and ongoing process. So the health resources are distributed inequitably across the country, and the process of getting that equity requires a different financing formula and a different service delivery platform. And that is what the NHI bill is trying to achieve. So in terms of getting ready, that is why we are spending money on the very many components of what's called the NHI grant, including the human resources components of that grant. But on its own, that will not, in a short space of time, solve all the challenges that we have. So there are improvements in some human some of the capacity in provinces. But as we know, many questions were asked about human resources. If you don't have the budget, you can't employ the people, even with the best will in the world, and even though we would like to. Honourable Munyai asked about the development in South Africa of pharmaceutical products, and specifically about Keflapela. So there's a big program running in the country, mostly through the Department of Trade and Industry, who's spearheading the development of a plan for the development of the pharmaceutical and other health products in the country. A lot of private companies are taking part, and a number of government departments, obviously ourselves included, identifying where the strengths and weaknesses are and where the opportunities are to manufacture products in South Africa. Some of that is pharmaceutical, and Ketapela is one of those. And Ketapela model is, as a state company, is something we are still engaging with them. They have made representations to the department, but it's far more complicated than meets the eye. And often with these types of new developments and new companies, the kind of capital that's required and the impact that it makes on other companies has to be considered at the same time. So it's not necessarily just a bilateral debate, and it's not as straightforward. So that is an ongoing discussion. And then there was a question around from Honorable Clark. I'll deal with the question around slide 9. Where the targets that are referred to, Honorable Clark mentioned the 6.5 million registered people and asked what happens to the unregistered people. Are they denied service? So maybe just to clarify, this is the people who are registered on the chronic medicine delivery system. So if you don't have a chronic disease, you will, and I hope you don't, you will never get onto the chronic medicine delivery system because you don't need to get a routine script delivered to your home or to your pharmacy or to a drop-off point down the road from your home. So what we are targeting is to have more than 10% of the entire South African population having access to medicines delivered in this way. That may or may not be equivalent to the number of people who are on chronic medicines, but it is the start. So those who do not have chronic medicines but need to get medicines from time to time will collect them through the normal delivery mechanisms at pharmacies and at hospitals, clinics, and so forth. This is specifically for the chronic medicine program, which, by the way, the department and the team who works on it won an innovation award for this program this year. We're very proud of it. The NHI funding, the 1.5 billion allocated this year, I think I have covered. It's about health system strengthening, and there are very specific things we are trying to strengthen, particularly the purchasing of private provider care in specific communities. So it's really to make sure that the bridging between the public and the private sector happens smoothly, and that includes programs that are lagging behind, like mental health and oncology. But we can go into details if we need to do that later. So just to remind us that these monies are allocated by the finance department, by Treasury, and they are signed off already because the budget has already been presented. Our health budget will still be presented, of course, when the House will get an opportunity to comment on the specifics. But these monies are allocated in collaboration with our colleagues in Treasury, and there may not be money for some things, but there are certainly money for the improvement of these services, which we're very grateful for. Honorable Wilson also asked about vaccination targets, and there was also a question from the Chair, Honorable Jacobs, about what is happening, vaccination targets, and what is happening and the increases of COVID in the past week. So we had set these vaccination targets at the time of drafting the APP, which was before Christmas, and obviously we are now going to be stretched to reach these targets because vaccination uptake has decreased. The public has got prematurely confident about COVID, we believe, and is no longer so enthusiastic about coming for vaccination. So we will struggle to increase, to get to the targets that we have set ourselves. However, we do know that COVID has not gone. We watch very closely on a day-to-day basis. The data is all in the public domain and updated every day on the PSA coronavirus website via the department, both the vaccination and the cases. And we, obviously, in the department are watching it at a minute level of detail. So there is some increase at the moment, and we are aware of obviously where it is and the trends that are showing. We also do know that some weeks ago, other parts of the world were reporting some sub-variants of this Omicron coronavirus variant. We also have some sub-variants, of which the BA4 and BA5 are relatively dominant at the moment in our landscape and may or may not be rising these flames. So we will watch carefully over the next few days to see whether this is a real trend or if it's just a small flicker of a flame for now. But as we know the information and it becomes clearer, we will know what to do, and the minister will make appropriate announcements if and when that is required. We did not return grant money, as the CFO, acting CFO reported. In fact, because of COVID last year, we were obliged to shift some of our NHI strengthening grant money into fighting COVID because of the pressures that we were experiencing at the time. The Honourable Tembekwai also asked about long-term investment of vaccines, but I've dealt with that. Dealing with the next wave of variants, well, so far it looks like everything, the vaccines we are using, the two vaccines that we have in abundance in the country, work extremely effectively. And the important thing for all of us, including the public, to note is that boosting with vaccines, both the Johnson & Johnson and the Pfizer vaccine, which we use, creates a cellular immunity, which is a longer-lasting immunity than the antibody response that we get from just wild virus exposure. So if you want to protect yourself, the best way to do it is to get several doses of vaccine as we are providing the vaccination program. Honorable Harbert asked about the program on digital transformation. This is a major part of our investment and has been for some years. That is why we were able to get the EVDS and the stock visibility system running so quickly. We are busy with integrating the smaller computer programs that deal with specific diseases into the mainstream of the total digital system. And I've already referred to the information exchange, both in the private sector and our own information exchange. So digital transformation is a massive part of what we are doing at the moment. And we still aspire to have a single patient record using the health patient registration system with the generated number as the single patient record that everybody will have access to in the country going down the line. That's the way to go, but it does take time and it takes connectivity as well, and that's something we're working on with the other government departments who work in that space. Nearing the end of my questions, Honourable Wilson also asked about money for NHI, so I think I hope I've dealt with the answer to your question. And so the last part of the question from the chairperson, Honourable Jacobs, was how are we going to reach the 12 to 34-year-olds? So there are two different groups. The 12 to 17-year-old population may be vaccinated with only Pfizer vaccine. You can't use Johnson & Johnson vaccine. It's not registered for use in minors, whereas the Pfizer vaccine is. Reaching this population at the moment is perhaps a bit of a luxury, but there are quite a large number of adolescents in this age group who are at risk should they get COVID. So I guess that they are the ones who are coming forward first. And people of this age group who congregate, you know, work socially and go to school are at risk, and the families and the environments that they live in do continue to put them at risk. So we will encourage adolescents to come forward for vaccination. But the group between the ages of 18 and 34 are the biggest population group that we deal with in the country. And our social listening reports have told us that this group seems to believe, as a group, that COVID will not affect them badly, and if they do get infected, it will be mild. Well, the history has shown us that may well be the case in general, but for that proportion of the population who do get sick, they get really sick, and people of this age group do die, and especially if they have other complications and have been immunocompromised for any reason, they become extremely vulnerable. So this population, the challenge is also that they are the working force. So if they do get sick, even if mildly sick and need to stay at home, there's a negative impact on their families, And because we all live with these families and family groups, the chance of infecting other people who might be older and at greater risk is increased. So we do try and convey this information on a regular basis as part of our programs, and we will continue to provide the information so that everyone can see. And the vaccines, we are constantly looking for new ways to improve sites and improve delivery. I'll leave it at that. Thank you, DJ.
Thank you very much, Dr. Chris. Valerie?
Thank you, PG. Honorable members, the Minister, Deputy Minister. So my response will be related to the medico-legal issues. Largely, the first and the bills. So the first one, let me just switch off the... So the first response relates to the four bills, and we got a question from the Honourable Member related to, firstly, the control of marketing of alcohol beverages bill and the liquor amendment bill, as well as the cannabis for private purpose bill. Those three bills, the National Department is not leading on those. They are led by other departments, specifically the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Justice. They will be in a better position to indicate how far the bills are. The bills that we are managing in National Health are the Traditional Health Practitioners Amendment Bill, the Health Ombuds Bill, and the Office of Health Standards Compliance Bill. Those are in the current legislative program for the current financial year 2022 and 2023, and some of them we intend approaching cabinet with by the end of June, and we are on track in terms of ensuring that these three bills reach parliament during the current program or the financial year. So the question related to the case management system and why Western Cape is not participating is purely because when we started the transversal tender, and by that we mean that it is for the Department of Health with the participation of the provinces, the Western Cape Department participated in the process towards the advertising of the tender. But at the time of implementation, all provinces had to indicate whether they will participate in the tender or not, and the Western Cape that the systems that they have in place in Western Cape are functional and they don't need any review or any upgrade. Therefore, they will continue with their system while we implemented the case management system for the 8 provinces. However, as and when we require information for consolidation, they submit their data and we have a consolidated picture for the entire country for the 9 provinces. Then the issue related to the why only we are targeting 4 provinces, yet the previous year was 7. I'm sorry, yes, 7 out of the 8. The fact is that for the previous financial year, we have already achieved rolling out the case management system to 4 provinces. I'll name them KZN, Northern Cape, Free State, and Northwest. So the target for this APP is for the remaining 4 provinces, which are Eastern Cape, Gauteng, Mpumalanga, and Limpopo. Hence the target saying only 4. It is 4 of the 8 because the 4 has already been dealt with in the previous year. They are implementing the case management system as we speak. The question related to the Eastern Cape medical legal challenges and what is the National Department doing with that to assist or to intervene. The Eastern Cape is participating in the intervention that the National Department has put in place, and that includes the legal side where the National Department is working with the Department of Justice, and members might be aware that the Department of Justice is busy with the State Liability Amendment Bill, which was presented in Parliament in 2018 as well as last year, January last year, and the Portfolio Committee of Justice indicated that they don't want to deal with that state amendment bill in piecemeal. So they are waiting for the Department of Justice to deal with the issue of the South African law reform process in terms of the reform, the legal reform of all the relevant bills. And maybe members might be also aware that the Department of Justice published the discussion paper in January this year related to that legislative reform related to the litigation, and and the Department of Health is one of the key stakeholders that will benefit from that legislation. Lastly, that legislation will assist the department and the provinces to look at the future medical expenses. And we hope that once that can be approved, which takes 80% of actually the court order for the cases that are presented before court, it will save the budget of the provinces, and they'll be able to focus on the intended service delivery purposes. Because we hope that the approval will be that we pay future medical cost expenses by utilizing our facilities where we have capacity instead of paying lump sums. And that is some of the interventions that we are assisting with, I mean, Eastern Cape and the rest of the other provinces as National Health, including the fraud and investigation part of this intervention, where the bogus practices by some attorneys is under investigation, and those cases will be shared with the SIU at the right time as soon as the president has proclaimed the act for the investigation by SIU. So those are the responses related to medical legal. The last DG, the last question that I wanted to address relates to the insourcing, whether we are insourcing or outsourcing cleaners, service, cleaning services and security. The department has taken a policy decision as National Health Council that we will work on the insourcing, and work was done to audit specifically the security services. Unfortunately, the insourcing cost estimate came out to be unaffordable for most provinces. So provinces are implementing that, including National, in a phased-in approach based on availability for funds, because we are not able to hire new security officers or cleaners in the current limited cost or funding that is available for compensation of employees, especially because we are working within the ceilings that are put in place by Treasury. So the bulk of the expenditure is within professional services, and hence most provinces are still having a hybrid model where they have both insourced as well as outsourced services. Thank you, DG. I'll stop that. Thank you, honorable members and minister.
Thank you very much, Mary. May I invite Dr. Zugiswa Pinini to deal with the question? In the interest of time, I will look for Dr. Bain. May I ask Mr. Reverend Morewane to come in on primary health care and related questions? Mr. Morewane?
Good afternoon, Gigi, and good afternoon, honorable members. I must say I have got a terrible network. I hope I'm audible. Honorable Chair and members, I have noted a number of questions that were raised. I'll deal with the first one, and I'll just deal with them because some of them are overlapping, so I'll deal with them as I've captured them. Some of them I've captured them programmatically. There was a question about the mental health policy framework that in the APP, particularly for 2021-2022, it is written not applicable. It is that reading is correct, honorable member, because we are saying in 2021-2022, we didn't have any activity in that space. but because we have written it this year, we then do not want to get an impression as if there was some work done in 2022. That is why we read it's not applicable. And if you can be seen by the columns preceding that, it would be written as a new indicator, new indicator. But indeed, from 2022-2023, we're proceeding with the policy development, and the succeeding years going to the outer year will show progress that will be made and how it will be monitored throughout the lifespan of our activities in the department. There were other questions that were raised, and I just want to deal with them quickly around mental health. We firstly acknowledge that there's a weakness in the mental health services, and following are the activities that were undertaken and are in place, and others are in the process of being put in place. We've put in place the mental health care review board in all provinces, so there's no province that does not have a mental health care review board. So those boards are very helpful because they then work with the health service providers on the ground to ensure, one, access of services, two, that is service of good quality, three, just to make sure that mental health cases are protected against any abuse or any untoward event or any adverse event. The minister has appointed a ministerial advisory committee. The advisory committee is in place. In fact, it helps because it's made up of experts. These experts come from non-governmental organizations, civil society, academia, practicing clinicians, and they are the ones that are outside of the influence of officials. They are independent in their own right, and therefore they are able to make sure that they monitor the delivery of mental health services. Whether we are involving other stakeholders outside, yes, we have in place an intersectoral committee on mental health, and this is made up of government departments, Department of Social Development, Department of Education, both lower and higher education, civil society organizations. And this is because the Human Rights Commission has actually identified this gap, and once they identified that gap, we then went on as an implementation of the recommendations of the Human Rights Commission to establish this intersectoral committee. There are in place plans, and they've been running very quickly to integrate mental health care into the primary health care services. And we have done that through training, through skills development, to ensure that the health professionals are skilled, are able to proactively detect, support, and refer people with mental health disorders when they are required to be transferred. And in the annual report of the year that passed, we've reported that we've conducted training of medical doctors and professional nurses working in designated medical or psychiatric units at a district and regional hospitals, and all other facilities that are listed to be providing 24-hour services. So I'm just taking long on this one because it came up several times, but I just want to say in conclusion, regarding the substance abuse, we've got a health sector drug master plan. And with a health sector drug master plan, we have taken on board all role players. But we wanted to bring it closer to health so that it is health that drives them, that drives the plan, rather than depending on other stakeholders. So they are then invited at our call to come and participate. Regarding the cancer campaign, cancer support and oncology services, you see, cancer support goes on from the beginning, from the lowest level of the end of the health system, through health education and health promotion, because we'd want to empower people to make sure that they are able to identify the signs of cancer in the earliest stage. You know, we want to teach mothers on how to detect breast cancer, for an example. We're encouraging mothers to come up for pap smears in the primary health care facilities. In fact, We do pap smears in all primary health care facilities. So therefore, that is one way of making sure that the detection is made much earlier. But we are also having the department actually put aside a good amount of money to support oncology services. I think making reference to 2017 campaign and use it to describe the attitude of the department and its action regarding cancer, it would not become a fair way to do, Honorable Chair, because we deal with a unique situation and we're able to point where the weakness has been. But to want to then assume But that is the case throughout the world, throughout the country. It will not become a very good representation, unfortunately. But what I'm presenting is what we're doing across the board. And with regard to primary health care, let me deal with this broadly in this honorable chair. That primary health care has been poised to deliver good quality services. I mean, we decided as far back to want to have quality improvement initiatives. One such is an ideal clinic. And ideal clinic has shown throughout the country to have reached out to a total of 3,470 clinics plus. And we reach out to them through baseline research determination every year to know what is wrong in each area. So it's one of the major quality improvement initiatives that they've taken. And we're very grateful that we have these budgets from National Treasury that we are using to build and strengthen the system for delivery of services at that level. And that funding also goes into supporting community health services, which is why we're employing community health care workers, which is why we're working with them, which is why we're giving them extra support, including outreach team leaders. So we're using that plan to strengthen malaria control and malaria management. We would want to eliminate malaria in the country. We would want to run and register at least 2 sub-districts, a sub-district where there's no, there's zero malaria transmission for a year under review. So we would want to use that money to build that capacity. But is primary health care being supported with data? Yes, it is. I mean, there's always been bias towards employment of primary health care, of human resources at primary health care level. I'm not about to say there are no vacancies. And I'm not about to say people that are staying there as community when they completely want to leave. But there's always been a determination to allocate nurses to that level. And this has been shown. And if I was to give an example, even at the height of COVID-19, nurses at primary health care level continue to deliver services, continue to do ideal clinic work, continue to make sure that clinics are performing at the highest level. And for me, I've never seen any level where resources have been deployed, where people are determined to do it, as I've seen in primary health care. With regards to the messaging on TikTok or YouTube, we're aware that the social media evolves and evolves even much faster. So what we'll do, working together with the communication colleagues, we will capture the moment to build on any emerging and re-emerging media platforms that we use. And it has been proven that the TikToks are very important because they are now in town. They are now fashionable. But tomorrow it may be something else. So our team is very agile, very alert to ensure that every other opportunity that arises, we're able to reach to so that we can then reach out as many people as possible. And particularly, those that are using this gadget. What are we doing with planting in the countryside, you know, working, I mean, through side by side messaging? What we do, we have a nutrition strategy, and we're going ahead with health promotion and school education program. Want to teach mothers, one, as mothers that are pregnant, two, as mothers that are breastfeeding, but as mothers that are bringing children up, so that they must be able to take their children for growth monitoring. They must be able to take their children to the facility. We administer vitamin A in the clinic and all forms of vaccination and immunization programs for children are available in our primary care facilities. But we want to make sure that our children grow and therefore they do not get stunted in the progression towards growth. In terms of there was a question on the plan to increase, well, what are we doing with regard to the increased number of COVID-19 cases? I must say we are ready for any resurgence because we have demonstrated in the past 5 sessions of resurgence or 5 to 4 waves that we have been able to respond. We are in communication with all stakeholders. In fact, what we have done, we have asked provinces to do 4 major things now. We said, now we know what we're doing. We want provinces to do full review of the 4 waves. Secondly, we want the provinces to then do what we call planning back better. What are we doing? We want to make sure that they plan back better to ensure that they do the 4th thing, which is to continue delivering the healthcare services, but also, number 4, to continue resetting and recover the health system
ensure that the losses that were that we suffered as a result of COVID-19 are gained. And we don't want to then come back after COVID is over, realize that everything has been lost. So even as we cast our eyes ahead facing the storm, we remember on the hindsight that there are issues that we need to continue doing. So this is what we're doing as we're approaching the possible resurgence. Regarding Unompilo, I must say that I think we community health research is going to help us to strengthen the work that's been done here. I think that the work that's going on and it's led by Dr. Chris in terms of how we're going to get ministerial determination to make sure that people are paid the salary, the methods before them have been canceled, and I'm sure when I was disconnected this may be covered. But I must say that we're working together in the department to ensure that these cadres of contributors to improvement of health services are not left in the lurch without being supported. With regards to climate change, South Africa, the National Department of Health, is the first department after environmental affairs to come up with a national climate adaptation plan, climate change adaptation plan. We are now revising that plan. We're working together with academia, with our South African Medical Research Council, and Human Science Research Council. So we should be able to produce a revised plan by the end of the year. And we're doing that quite determinedly to make sure that we are adaptive to the impact of climate change. Of course, the other areas, I'm sure in terms of buildings, the infrastructure colleague will be able to deal with that. The environmental health norms and standards, Honorable Chair, what are we doing? In the country today, we want to make sure that all municipalities are rendering environmental health services that are compliant with the norms and standards. So what we then do, we look at 52 municipalities through the same lens that the municipalities are looking at. So we find that their readiness and capacity is impacted upon by all other areas that are afflicting the municipalities. But today, we have reported 24 district municipalities out of 52 that have performed over 75% regarding the norms and standards. And we've got a plan in place to make sure that we then target those that have fallen below. I'm then sure that we'll be able to come up closer to a desirable number, maybe of about 30 or so, because as I'm saying, for them to be able to render, implement the norms and standards, they need to be at a standard where even services are generally is up to par. So, Honorable Chair and the minister and the members of the committee, members of the media, the teach, and all the colleagues in the department, this is where my response will end. Thank you very much, Elowa.
Good afternoon, Honorable Minister and members. I will switch off the camera because I don't have enough power. I'll respond to the HIV and TB programs and also the maternal child and the women's health. The question on in relation to the target of program to find and treat people with TB disease over 200,000. The response is that we have had a TB prevalence survey that suggested that we have about 290,000 of new infections of TB annually. So we've been finding about 200,000 of these patients. That is why we're having a gap of finding 150,000 patients of TB every year. And the next question was on what is the extent of the number of clients lost to follow up for TB and HIV treatment, and what are the causal factors of this, and how can the causal factors be addressed? The response is that the loss to follow-up can be caused by many factors, including the long duration of the treatment, especially for the multi-drug resistant TB, high pill burden, and also seeing about some of our patients not coming back for checkups. There's also a factor that the TB patients are co-infected with HIV, so they're taking both treatment for TB and HIV, and that could affect their compliance. There are factors that they also need some nutritional support, they need to be supported at home, etc. And it could be that loss of follow-up can be attributed to the mobile nature of our patients, mobility patients that they are here tomorrow, the other day they are coming. And also there are patients who might be coming outside the borders of South Africa. And some of the patients, they just decide to stop, just disengage with the services. Communal carers, they do go and trace patients in the facilities. We also have a campaign within our health facilities that is welcoming their campaign. It's aiming at finding out all those patients they have just been lost to follow up for whatever reason. such that when they come to our facilities, the facilities managers and the facility staff will know how to deal with them in a timely manner. The other question was about the AWS program affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. Yes, the programs have been affected by the pandemic, but we managed to give our patients treatment through the chronic medicines. This is the MCT program, and also the patients where we had help from our partners where the medication was delivered to the patient's home during that time. But after that, we have our catch-up plan where we are looking at strategies of how to retain patients and find them. And currently, our performance is showing that we are coming back to where we were, almost where we were before the pandemic. And the other question was about TB and HIV treatment schools. We do have an integrated school health program with the Department of Education, but as a Department of Health, we just bring services closer to the school. We do not go into the school. The Department of Justice Education has commanded an integrated HIV and TB and SIS policy, but they are still working with the school government for this. But because there was COVID interruption, their process is still on. So what happens when the nurses find something that with the school child having a problem that is being captured, they will refer the person next to the to a clinic that is nearer to their home for treatment. The other question was about the youth adolescents that are infected with HIV and are having treatment and have to support because of the attitude or the insensitivity that they're treated. To say that as a Department of Health, we are implementing the youth friendly services in our facilities. This is to increase access of services, health services to the youth and adolescents that are coming to our services. This is where the youth they meet and they are treated by a healthcare worker who understands the youth issue. So in a way, they are encouraging them to go on treatment if they want to take treatment if they are on treatment of ARV, and they also support them on that treatment. And to give them also information on the SRA and also the determination of treatment if they need any of that. We also do go to them and universities to give them information about that. Regarding the adolescents that are not compliant with medical treatment, we do have a support partners that are looking at some of the strategies and how to retain adolescents within the health services. And the next one was about from Honorable Naledi regarding the obstetric services. To say that for now, within the healthcare system, we are receiving reports from the Eastern Cape where the honorable member notified us that there were no services. In February, we have received about 1,064 examinations that we conducted in the Eastern Cape. So it means that there are services available. It could be that in this facility where that person went to, there were no services for whatever reason. And in response
point
to
of the marriage,
we are saying Honorable.
Chairperson, through you, point of order, please.
Well, Chairman, point of order. Thank you. You may raise it.
Thank you so much. I just want to give clarity to the NDOH. This is not a case-based thing. We got this report from the AG that there's three provinces in the country that don't offer termination of pregnancy. The CGE also says the same thing, and that Eastern Cape is one of them. Is the CGE and the AG both lying?
Thank you, Honourable.
Honourable member, I am just reporting that we have received a response from the Eastern Cape member about the number of termination of services that have been performed in that province, which means that the answer is available.
Thank you. Please continue.
And regarding the mesh, that's the Honorable Member's referring to, the Department of Health is in the process of reviewing guidelines and SOPs to review the current practices, including the use of mesh. They will be finalized within this financial year. So we are looking at that, and once the guidelines are there, we will monitor and we will be monitoring these practices. DG, I think those were the questions that I was supposed to respond to regarding HIV and TBM.
My question was about the fact that I asked the department to investigate the use of transvaginal and surgical mesh. And I wanted to do a follow-up on how far the investigation has gone. Have they investigated the issue of physical mesh crisis in South Africa now?
Thank you. Honorable Chirwa, can I make a suggestion? I think it might be difficult for the department to answer directly. That's what I understand. Would you be willing to write to the department, and you could also forward those questions to me as the chair and the committee secretary? And if you're not happy with their responses, or if they do not respond, that you will be afforded another opportunity to raise this again with them on this platform.
Chairperson, that is not fair. We are in a portfolio committee with the minister and his team. I'm asking them a follow-up on something I asked from them months ago together with SAPRA. SAPRA is not able to answer me. If SAPRA can answer me, the NGOH must at least answer me. It means they have not investigated, because they could easily say, yes, we've investigated this and this many cases, and then from that particular thing, we're going here. They have not investigated, and I need them to say, we have not investigated. So I know that we can ask things in this portfolio committee, and the department takes them and throws them in the dustbin. It's clear, they didn't investigate anything. They didn't investigate anything. So they're telling me about general regulations. I'm asking, it's a peculiar question. There are women with leaking wombs in this country. Firstly, it's a sterilization.
Honorable Chirwa out of this meeting, and you don't take Honorable Geller out of this meeting, because it was the discussion and the thing that went on between the two of them. The fact of the matter is Honorable Chirwa is asking
the department about the response of the question that he previously asked. So this method that we use of saying take Honorable Chura out of this meeting is unfair. And then I don't agree with it. Can she be brought back into this meeting so that her question can be answered effectively by the department? I'm here to protect her. And secondly, this is not about the EFF and this is not about the ANC. So Honorable Gela must refrain from saying we are tired. Who is he to can say that he's tired? Who is he in the committee? She's a committee member like all of us here. So please, it's not fair.
Dr. Chair,
bring Honorable
Gela. Are you the principal of this committee? Are you the
principal of this committee? Go be tired with your ANC government. You are tired of here, that you are tired of ANC in this country. Women have leaking wombs in this country.
Yes.
You want to give us like one answer? I want my answer. Give me answer.
You will get your answer. You are not accountable.
I get to hold you accountable. Whether you like it or not, it's our job. And nobody must stop me from doing my job. They must give me my answers.
You are muted, Chairperson. Honorable Chair, you are muted. You are muted. You are not audible, Honorable Chair. You are muted. Thank you. Maybe it's my problem. I can't hear the chair.
No, the chair is muted.
Now, can you hear me now?
Yeah,
Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, when the chairperson calls on you, then you need to at least keep quiet and listen to what the chairperson wants to say. It is not correct that we take the meeting in the way that, in the direction that it goes. When one has a point to raise it orderly. I think I'm a very fair chairperson that allows people to raise their points, but one can raise the same point in an ordered manner and then allow those who respond that question, who ask the question, to allow them time to respond. And if they do not have the answer, we do have recourse in terms of them being able to either respond in a written reply, or I go so far as to say, write also to me, and I will assist you in the follow-up of that question. But to take this meeting, such a wonderful meeting, right at the end of the meeting to where we've taken it today, is not correct. It is not correct in terms of the services that we deliver to our people. I really want to urge you not to do this. And when I said mute those members, I did not say remove that member, firstly. Secondly, I said members. Because both those members wouldn't listen to me when I was calling them. So I'm hoping that we've now ended that. We end that now, right there. I will allow the minister to respond to what was raised. And we will take his response, whatever that response would be, and we move forward. Thank you very much, honorable members. Minister, can you please respond?
Can I proceed, Minister? My part?
We don't have much time. Just very briefly on the infrastructure issues. Please just talk quickly to that.
Okay, Minister, a quick one. I'm going to start with an overview when it comes to the healthcare facilities that were affected by the flooding in KZN. There were six districts that were affected. And within those districts, it was Itekwini, Ubu, Ilembe, Ndumundlovu, King Cetshwayo, and Umkhanyakude. So the number of CHCs that were affected is 34. So the number of clinics that were affected is 34. Number of CHCs that were affected is 3. Number of hospitals that were affected is 23. and also the number of other facilities, including offices and also the EMS stations, were about 5. The budgeting that is going to be required to fix the damage is about 200 billion. It was quantified by the engineers that belongs to the Department of Health. So that's basically the overview picture in terms of the facilities that were affected by the flooding. I wanted also to touch on the item that was raised by Honorable Chirwa regarding the status of Charlotte Matrek. When it comes to Charlotte Matrek, I must also indicate that, given the brief background, quick one. There was a fire last year, 16 April, and the after that fire, there was a slow progress when it comes to the fixing of the areas that were affected by the fire. I must also indicate that there were complaints that were forwarded to the Office of the Presidency, and then the minister was requested to intervene on the situation because there was a slow progress in terms of rectifying this facility. And on the 27th of January, there was a meeting between the minister and the premier of the Gauteng province. In that meeting, it was agreed that the hospital is that the project is going to be transferred to the National Department of Health. We took over the project to date. Honorable, we are intending to open up the emergency unit. I've just received an occupancy certificate from the city of Johannesburg. We are hoping to hand over the unit at the end of this month, and then it will be operational from there onwards. There are other items that are supposed to be covered within the facility, and those items from block 1 until up to block 5, those items will be completed by the end of next year. And when we took over the project, the Department of Infrastructure was intending to finish the project in January 2027, but we have now reduced that timeline by 36 months, so we are on the right track. And also, we have saved some funding, which is about 305 million. The Department of Infrastructure were planning to do the work for about 1.4 billion. The National Department of Health is going to do this work within around 1 billion rand. So we are saving about 305 million rand on the project. But the whole project will be completed at the end of next year. So basically, that's the status around Charlotte Matrek. And then let me cover the item that come from the Honorable Dr. Jacob in terms of the interventions coming from the universities. Currently, we are in the process of reviving some of the PPP projects that were put on hold a few years ago. These PPPs are inclusive of Chris Ani, New King Edward, Dr. George Mukari, New Shoshangube Hospital, and New Tigerberg Hospital. These PPP projects are related to the teaching institutions, and part of the requirements of these teaching requirements is to partner with universities. We are in the process of negotiating a partnership with universities for these facilities, and the universities normally fund their own section where they will be using for teaching purposes. So that's basically my responses when it comes to infrastructure. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. Okay, DG, I think we was there somebody still outstanding? We don't have much time. Maybe let one more person, then we should round up.
Yes, it's Pakiso on the nurses training and the colleges. That's all me.
Okay, Pakiso, you can come in, then we should conclude.
and the issue of forced sterilization, it has not been answered.
DG, is Pakiso on the platform?
Yes, she was on the platform.
On the nurses issue, Dr. Makanya is not here.
No, she's not here. She has asked Pakiso to stand in for her. I don't know what happened. I will check her, Minister, once we proceed. I'd like to request Dr. Chris just to come in on the speak. On the alleged post sterilization, then what I'm looking for Pakiso Minister. But he will just be very brief. Dr. Chris?
Okay, thanks very much. Yeah, there isn't time, so I'll be very brief. So there was an investigation done and a committee was appointed. They did submit a report to the minister, but it was beyond the scope of the actual answer of the question. So they were asked to refine it to respond directly to the committee on the Commission on Gender Equality, and that was done. And that report has been submitted, as far as I'm aware, to the Commission of Gender Equality. But they're in the process of doing that. The committee that investigated raised a whole raft of additional questions, which are in the department for incorporation into more permanent structures of the department and other advisory committees to the minister, because just a freestanding response to allegations of this magnitude and potential problems that were raised would not have really served us in the long term. So that is what is happening, is that the and then regarding the people who were identified, there were 22 people on the original list of the 48 women who were identified in the report who were traced, and their details were passed on to the heads of departments of the provinces where they reside, requesting that they continue with the care, the clinical care of those patients within the services. So those were the actions that have been undertaken. Thank you.
Are you able to deal with that? Okay, Pakiso, quickly on the nursing issues.
Thank you, Minister, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Progress reports on the training of nurses and opening of nursing colleges. Currently, 10 nursing colleges were designated through Government Gazette to offer the new nursing programs, including higher certificate, diplomas, and bachelor degrees. These are offered in all colleges with effect from January 2020. And currently, there is the department finalizing accreditation for postgraduate diplomas in various specialties by the Council on Higher Education. Numbers per program per annual intake will be provided. And also to indicate that the South African Military Health Service is the 10th college. Thank you, DG.
Thanks, Minister. We will hand back to the Minister.
Thank you very much to the team. Chair, let me just say that we are available to deal with any further matters which may not have been concluded to the satisfaction of members. We will be guided by yourself, including on the issue of the forced sterilization matter. Let me just make 2 points on that one that Dr. Chris has indicated. One of the issues which we have found was that in the report of the Commission for Gender Equality, there are a number of allegations which are made. As we went deeper into further investigation, a number of those cases, there could not even be substantiation of whether actually certain procedures were performed in terms of further accessing of the records which could indicate whether actually because the first thing before you conclude that whether it was voluntary or forced, first of all, was the procedure which is alleged actually performed. And in many of those cases, I think there were only about two or three cases where actual cases of sterilization could be established. But that work, we will continue to follow up. And let me just mention also that on a daily basis, we receive letters from particular lawyers, lawyers who have been appointed by a particular party also participating in this meeting. So when we're dealing with on the parliamentary side, whenever we get this question, we just need to make the committee aware that we also, almost on a daily basis, receive letters of lawyers who are saying they've been instructed by a particular party to make particular demands. So we're also dealing with that as they come. I thought I was on the floor, Chairperson. Can you protect me also? I've got the right to participate.
It's a point of order. Well, nobody's stopping you from participating. It's a point of order.
Honorable Chair, I think I have the right to participate in this meeting.
Can I get an opportunity to chair my meeting, both of you, please? Minister, I'm obliged to just take the point of order. And Honorable Jirwa, let it be a point of order, and then the Minister will reply. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The question was, we send the department names and contact details of women who have health issues. I personally took them to Steve Biko. They were turned back because the issues with the Department of Health. So I'm asking them, did they deal with the issues, their health issues, those women who are forcefully sterilized, who are still leaking in their wounds as I speak now? Did they take their contact details and deal with their health issues or not? That was the question.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chirwa. Yes, I'm very tempted to answer you on that question also as a medical specialist. Because what you actually...
It's a question for the minister.
Yes, it's a question for the minister. What you are actually asking is also not medically correct. But I'm going to leave that question to the minister.
I took women to a hospital and you were sent back. That's medically incorrect. I'm asking, as the department to help these women, that we send them names of contacts and their addresses. Have they helped them now? Don't manipulate me, because I'll manipulate you back. It's a simple question. Did they help them or not? Did they help those women or not? That's it.
I'm going to allow the minister to answer. And minister, you have the right to say whatever is the current situation.
Did you help them or not? That's the question. Yes or no? That's it.
I am still on the floor, and I'm the chairperson of this meeting. I need to be respected.
Yes, you're not the minister. So don't answer questions for the minister. You're the chairperson, not the minister. Let the minister answer for himself. He's the minister for your meeting. He will not answer for himself. The minister must answer. Did you help the women or not?
Ms. Majalamba. Thank you. Minister, please continue.
Chair, I raise my hand.
Honorable Munia, what are you raising?
Sorry, Chair, I know you are doing very well to share the meeting, but I wanted to say that, remember, we should not raise the point of order to disrupt the minister from answering the question. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Munia. Honorable Minister, please continue.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Just going back on that matter, just to say that while members are free to raise issues if they are approached by members of the community in terms of attention for care in our facilities, But we must also...
Sorry, through you, Honorable Chairperson. The Minister is responding to Honorable Nadeli Jira's question in her absence. Can you allow her in so that she can listen to the response of the Minister?
She's absent. I have seen her still on the system. Is she
okay.
Absent?
I thought maybe they removed her. Then I would say let her be let in because it's a response directly for her question.
Honorable Dr. Tebakwayo, let me address you also now. This has been ongoing for a while. It is a persisting problem. I am trying to address the problem. As the chairperson of this portfolio committee, I make rulings. The rulings need to be abided by the members of the of parliament when I do make those rulings. I cannot consistently have somebody doing what she is doing. And now today you're insisting on protecting her. Let me do my work. I do appreciate you raising your concern, but we do have other means through which we can do this thing instead of becoming unruly and misbehaving. So let's put this on the back burner now. I think we will have that discussion at the portfolio committee. There are other avenues, like for example, writing to the minister. And if you don't, you don't have the satisfaction, write it in. And if you don't have the satisfaction, bring it to the portfolio committee. But do not use this platform in order to create such havoc within my meeting. I will rule on that. That's the authority that was given to me. Thank you. Honorable Minister, thanks. Please answer the question. If it's not the answer which members would want to hear, they are free. Write on the chat and say, you know, the minister has not answered my question in the way that I thought it ought to have been answered. Can the minister please write to us? We will always do that in the interest of the people of South Africa.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Just, I don't want to take too much of your time. Just on that matter, to say that we also do have systems. We do have systems of how particular medical conditions get handled. I know that one of the demands from some of the honorable members was that we should direct all those kind of complaints to particular hospitals. We don't function, our system doesn't function that way. That's why Dr. Crisp indicated that where there were particular continuing complaints of a medical nature, our approach was to link those particular patients with the provinces where the alleged procedure would have happened so that their records can be found and so that if there is an allegation that there is a persistence of an aftermath of a particular procedure, then those records can be located in that particular facility. Didn't take too much of your time. Just on that matter, to say that we also do have systems. We do have systems of how particular medical conditions get handled. I know that one of the demands from some of the honorable members was that we should direct all those kind of complaints to particular hospitals. We don't function, our system doesn't function that way. That's why Dr. Crisp indicated that where there were particular continuing complaints of a medical nature, our approach was to link those particular patients with the provinces where the alleged procedure would have happened so that their records can be found and so that if there is an allegation that there is a persistence of an aftermath of a particular procedure, then those records can be located in that particular facility and they can then be referred. If the matter, whatever complication can't be handled at the lower level, then they can be referred. If, for instance, the alleged procedure happens in a particular part of KZN, as an example, there were a number of cases of that nature, they will be evaluated at that level. If they need a specialist, there is a particular referral system in the KZN province, and so is all the other provinces. So the
insistence. Okay, have you done that? Have you done what you're talking about now? Have you done it?
No. Chair, I'm being interrupted again.
Can you allow the minister to respond to you? Hey, charity begins at home. Oh, he must respond like a
non-minister. Ah, man, if a minister is to have Thank you.